group of villains. Sad souls in costumes, wanting you to think them all dark and deep.
What's it like? Live your life as a punchline.
But all it would take would be one blessed act of rebellion for you to restore your dignity in its entirety.
You know the deal. Complete the mission, you get 10 years off your sentence. You fail to follow my orders in any way, and I detonate the explosive device in the base of your skull.
Love them or hate them, these are your brothers and sisters for the next few days.
Any questions?
Hand?
Yes, that is your hand. Very good.
We're all gonna die.
I hope so.
Robert Dubois. He's in prison for putting Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet.
I'm not joining your suicide squad.
We'll see.
My court date is coming up. And Miss Waller said maybe you could help me out.
You're threatening my door!
Everyone stand down.
Miss Waller, I don't...
Stand down!
I wouldn't take such extreme measures if this mission weren't more important than you could possibly imagine. Are you in or out? Good. Let's meet your team.
It's okay, I'm not okay.
Each member is chosen for his or her own completely unique set of abilities.
Let's go, number two.
Good to know.
Is this thing a dog?
A dog? What kind of dog do you think it is, mate?
I'm gonna go with Afghan hound.
Oh my god, is it a werewolf?
Yo, they sent me this to a werewolf! Yo, let me out!
Hey, he's not a werewolf, okay? He's a weasel.
He's harmless. I mean, he's not harmless. He's killed 27 children, but, you know.
Your mission is to destroy every trace of something known only as Project Starfish. Any questions?
Starfish is a slang term for a butthole. Think there's any connection?
No.
Nothing like a bloodbath to start the day.
They call you Peacemaker.
I cherish peace with all my heart. I don't care how many men, women, and children I need to kill to get it.
I thought you were the crazy one.
I am.
Here's the deal. We fail the mission, you die.
If we find out any information you give us is false, you die.
If you cough without covering your mouth...
Harley, no. Although, that isn't an open invitation for you to cough without covering your mouth.
The movie stuff, you know, and then the first, almost the first character my brain registers seeing is the guy from Walking Dead, Merle, yeah, so Michael Rooker. So I saw him, like, he's the first face that I register in my mind, and I don't like that guy at all. I don't like the actor, I don't like the person, you know, so I'm like, oh man, am I gonna enjoy 2 hours? I'm gonna watch the 2 hours of this guy's in the movie.
I went into it, and, you know, they're playing Folsom Prison Blues, and Michael
Michael Rucker's in the jail cell, and I'm like, you know what? I'm vibing with movie already. I'm like, this is Guardians 2.5 or whatever, right?
I thought he handled the music montage meeting the characters a lot better. The intro of this movie definitely fooled me. And what I mean is, like, you know, usually your main characters are going to get what, like a song associated with them. So I thought, okay, Savant's going to be around for a while because he's getting Johnny Cash. It definitely set the tone for the movie for me.
The first thing I thought back to was Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, which was written by James Gunn. It was one of the first big things for either one of those guys. They basically launched both of their careers. And for Gunn to, I feel, had to have intentionally reached back to Johnny Cash specifically, given the role that song plays in his own filmography. So immediately hearing those strains, even though it's an obvious on-the-nose track, like he said, I felt like it was almost like maybe a victory lap or something for him. You know, kind of like a, I'm still here, I go back
coming to back around type thing.
Yeah. And so, and again, while The Band Comes Around is going to be the superior song and the superior song usage, it immediately put on a smile on my face and immediately got me on the movie side just from the usage of the song and the visual of Michael Rooker sitting in that solitude.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I definitely, that scene caught me off guard. That movie led me to believe I was going to watch something, and I was totally caught off guard within like the next 10 minutes.
Everything else happened. It was so fast.
They're getting the faux Suicide Squad team together, and I'm still kind of feeling it.
The jokes were horrible when they were on the plane about, like, a dog? Is this a dog? Horrible jokes. So I'm like, oh my god, it's one of those. It's going to be another comedy movie.
And then they're on the beach, and people are getting their heads blown off. But right before that happened, Harley Quinn shows up, and I was like, oh shit, I fucking hate her. I hate this character. I don't like Margot Robbie. I don't like anything about this. Like, I was like, oh fuck, like, I totally forgot. I hated this in the first movie. She was one of the worst parts of that movie. And I was like, I realize people really, really like her interpretation of the character or whatever. I find it to be like nails on a chalkboard annoying. Like, I don't like the accent. The jokes never land. I was like, oh crap, she's gonna be in this movie like a lot. And so then I started to get nervous. But then I was kind of fighting that with, like, look, it's Idris Elba. And I like Idris Elba. But then, you know, they brought his daughter in. And I'm like, oh, they're kind of just redoing what Will Smith had to go through in the first movie. But then they start doing the whole, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And I'm like, oh, now he's like kind of intentionally shitting on the first movie. Like, he's going so overtly against what the first movie was. And I'm like, that's a little weird. And then, you know, all of that first team dies on the beach. And I was like, oh, you know what? I kind of like wanted the weasel to stick around. And I kind of liked Michael Rooker's sort of like, he doesn't know what am I doing here? You know what I mean? He's actually got some conscience to the situation he's being put in, where it seems like nobody else seems to remember they got a fucking bomb implanted in their neck and those stakes just kind of vanish and nobody gives a shit about them, right? Like, and then
they all die, and the guy with the long hair, blonde hair, died too. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, I didn't expect that to happen. So I was a little bit, you know, entertained about that because I didn't expect that to happen. I didn't watch the trailers. I didn't know anything who was in it. Didn't know absolutely nothing about that movie going in.
I remember as I'm watching it happen, like as I'm watching the characters being introduced and the slow walk and all that kind of good shit, I'm assuming this is either like a prequel mission, a setup mission, or yeah, that this was like a side thing, and then this is like one team's going to go off and do a mission, and then you're going to see those characters cycle into another mission for some reason. In no way was I expecting them to hit the beach and then just fucking get wiped out.
Yeah, neither did I. That caught me completely off guard.
And I got to tell you, I fucking love that scene. And it has like almost everything I wanted in a Suicide Squad movie inside of 15 minutes. You got the one member that's working their own angle and betrays the team, and you've got all, you know, anybody can perish, anybody can, you know, all this bad shit happening. You don't know who's good, who's bad, who's going to make it, who's not going to make it. Yeah. I love that they had the balls to take out one of the main people from the first movie that early on, so that literally you get a sense of anything can happen from this point onward.
But it was pretty gruesome, though. I mean, Blackguard has the front of his face just blown off.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this. And then I'm very familiar with James Gunn. So I'm like, okay, I know what James Gunn is somewhat capable of. And again, I kept hearing how gory the movie was. So I was like, okay, it's going to be, you know, lots of blood. But to show like the gaping hole in his head, and I'm like, you know, this is somewhat of a semi-famous actor right now, and he's gone within like the first 10 minutes. I'm like, okay, all bets are off. Like, I don't even know who's going to make it. I was pretty sure Harley was going to be the only one that was going to be alive. I was pretty sure.
As it progresses and things get worse and worse.
Yeah.
But like, just as a for instance, you know, I think just just a great moment of filmmaking when you see the helicopter hit the trees and shoot all those bits of wood into him.
Splendid wood, yeah, and they just go right through Boomer.
Well, that's just it, though. When you see him hit like that, he's still, you know, walking around and conscious and everything, so you figure that's probably going to be the worst of his injuries, and then the fucking helicopter lands on him, so like it's even setting you up for it's like, okay, no, Boomer's fine. Oh, he's not fine. Oh, he's fucking dead. Yeah, and it's like, I like that they gave him the glowing boomerang there at the end, too, just to make sure you're constantly... It's almost like the Suicide Squad version of the girl in the red coat from Schindler's List, where it just draws attention to this one person who you're thinking is going to make it or you're going to pay special attention to, and it's just alerting you that, no, this person is very doomed. They have the massacre, and then they cut to people who died. I was fucking high. That was such a great soundtrack selection, and showing them, you know, spinning around the offices and spinning around the side of the battle, the use of the new red cameras that give them greater mobility and greater fluid motion stuff. That was like perfect. That is like that. The opening to this movie was like one of my favorite sequences of any superhero movie ever. I fucking love that shit, and I've watched it multiple times thanks to HBO Max. And I know if I watch nothing else in this movie, I want to watch that first 15 minutes over and over again. I even fucking love the credits where it's Savant's blood in the water slowly forming the Warner Brothers credits and shit. All that shit, I fucking loved it. Seeing the people in the offices trading money and talking smack to each other and shit, the nihilistic glee of that sequence, just absolutely, I adored it, and I will always love it. That was so great.
That was definitely a James Gunn moment.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of the reviews talked about him coming up from trauma and, you know, being able to get down and dirty in a way that maybe other filmmakers who normally do superhero movies can't, and that sequence, more than anything else in the movie, showcases that.
Oh, I kind of forgot that in the trailer, all those characters that they show get killed on the beach in the very beginning are only in those couple scenes and not in the rest of the movie.
I did enjoy the movie. I did like it quite a bit. I thought it was great. There were some great scenes. I did love that it was so different than anything that's out there, but I just felt sometimes, yeah, it was just a bit much for me anyway. You?
In editing the podcast, we were all fairly negative about the movie, and I liked the movie a lot better than I was able to communicate. So how did you actually receive the movie?
Oh, are we jumping to that already?
Yeah, unless you got something else you wanted to talk about.
Okay. I thought the movie was like strongly just okay.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
And then the other team shows up, and I'm like, okay, well, let's see what is going on. The main guy, the African-British guy, or I don't know what his nationality is, I was okay with, like, seriously, he was the one who saved the whole movie for me. I love the scene where he's screaming like his daughter and him are going back and forth screaming, oh, we're the father, man! Like, going back and forth, and then they just sat down and just start talking about normal stuff. That reminds me of my childhood. That's how my childhood was. It's like, my family used to scream going on, tell you the worst things, and you, like, you know, goes back and forth, and then seriously, next minute, they will behave like nothing ever happened. Like, so that whole scene reminds me of my family. So I wish what it was amusing. That is the only story, like the dad and the daughter, eh, whatever. But like that, I think he was a very good actor.
Loved him. That man does no wrong.
It took me a while to warm to Elba because I think it's one of those deals. Well, no, not in this movie. But I mean, he was this guy that people kept talking up. And I'd see him in this, and I'd see him in that. And it was like, yeah, that's okay. That's all right. I think because I didn't watch The Wire and everybody loved his character on that. Yeah, I only watched the first season of The Wire. And so I think that he had a ton of fans off of that. And so he had a cachet. So where when I'd seen this shit like fucking the Ghost Rider sequel and stuff, I didn't really see what the appeal was. But by this point, especially seeing him in this movie, it's like, oh yeah, this guy's got a great charm and charisma and the accent just sounds great.
Presence.
Yeah.
He has a great presence. Like when I loved it when he reacted to being, you know, scared of the rat. I thought that was fantastic. I could not stop laughing.
Well, I mean, he's a big guy and he sold his being intimidated by these rodents. You could tell he was freaking out. As the character, that was pretty cool. Somebody like a Mark Wahlberg would struggle because he couldn't show any kind of vulnerability in that respect. So I like that he's confident enough to be able to show himself struggling in that role.
For some reason, the other day when I was talking about, I kept calling him Bloodshot, and I'm like, I know that's wrong.
This is a about, what is it, Bloodsport? Is that his name? Bloodsport? Bloodshot?
Let's say it couldn't be more obvious that the part was written for Will Smith's Deadshot, and they just put no effort into rewriting it, so it's like, okay, well, now he's Bloodsport, and he has an English accent because we got Idris Elba, but it's the same fucking character.
Yeah. Exactly, right.
Is that a real character? Because I don't remember ever reading about him.
He is not a very well-known character. He was one of the guys that John Byrne introduced in his first year on the Superman title to try to be all cool and edgy and shit. And I want to say the character predated the movie, but it might have been the same time. It might have been one of those Deadpool kind of things where he just like knew this was a throwaway character. And so in the comics, he's this big muscle-bound black dude with a red bandana over his head who kind of looks like a Rambo type. And then years later, they introduced a new Bloodsport who wore an all-white uniform that may have been a white supremacist or some shit. So like a complete turnaround. And they had that guy around when Barry Kitson had his brief run on, I think, Adventures of Superman. And so you're talking about this character probably had was around for maybe a year or so at most, and then there have been no Bloodsport since then. So as visualized this movie, as characterized this movie, might as well be a completely different character. If I remember correctly, like, I think either Bloodsport or his brother were handicapped, and that was some part of his origin story and shit. He did fight Superman using conventional weapons, but beyond that, this is a nothing character. So I think it was clearly just they wrote it for Deadshot. He's played exactly like Deadshot. You even got the daughter like he had in the first movie. So I think they were just sort of hanging a lampshade on it. It's like, yeah, they should have just said it was Deadshot. He should have just, but I guess they didn't want to explain why all of a sudden Deadshot has an English accent. So, you know, they gave him a xenomorph helmet and then called him Bloodfed.
Yeah, and that helmet looked really familiar, like a video game character from the 90s or something. There was something very familiar about that helmet.
It's a xenomorph.
It does look very xenomorphish.
I assure you, look at the helmet, look at a picture of the Giger xenomorph. It's the exact same thing. They even gave him like the alien mouth at the bottom, the kind of skull thing. Because if you look at they got away from it over the years, but if you look at the first couple of movies, the skull is transparent and you can see like something similar to a human skeleton underneath that carapace or what have you. And that's what they did. It's literally a Giger xenomorph, but turned into a helmet.
Yeah, I mean, luckily he doesn't wear it too often, although he kind of wore it more than I was thinking he wore it. But
well, it was ironic that the one time he really needed it, he didn't have it anymore.
Yeah, right. Very good.
And it's also noticeable that DC's very much embraced the Marvel CGI masks that go on and off whenever they fucking feel like it.
That's what my son said. He's like, he just lost his helmet. That was stupid.
So going into the movie, were you excited or was it just another, you know, action movie? How were you guys approaching it? Because obviously me, I was excited enough to where I was willing to, you know, abstain from a lot of my normal activities to make sure the movie didn't get spoiled for me. I'm a fan of the property, even though I'm not often a fan of its adaptation. So I was actually, again, it got me to go to a movie theater, which takes a lot these days, especially. Were you guys going there really enthused about it, or were you just kind of like wait and see or what?
I actually went in with kind of low expectations. I don't think I made it throughout the whole first movie at all. I think I only watched it for like less than 15 minutes and I'm just like, nope, this is not for me.
I was super excited, but not to see the movie. I like watching the DC movies with my daughter because that's kind of our thing. So that's why I was excited. Even though my son and my wife were there, that it's kind of like mine and her thing. And even though I didn't enjoy Birds of Prey and stuff, my daughter did. And that's all I really care about is, you know, enjoying stuff with her. So I was pretty pumped up to see it. She was pumped up to see it, and she loved it. I think what happened to me was a little bit of spoilers. Like, not really spoilers, but just watching. It was kind of like the reverse of the whole He-Man thing where everyone was bashing on it online. Everyone was saying how groundbreaking and awesome it was. And I came across in my Instagram people saying that it was as good as Guardians of the Galaxy. And I definitely didn't think that. To me, it was an enjoyable movie, but not enjoyable enough where I want to see it again anytime soon. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think so. So I wouldn't say I was excited to see it. I was very curious. I think all of the, I think it had pretty decent trailers. It seemed to have a good buzz. It was sort of, you know, James Gunn was going to go out there and he had the reins taken off him. He could do whatever he wanted. And he seems to obviously be a comic book fan. And then, you know, with the first Suicide Squad film from 2017, 2016 was so like bootleg James Gunn, right? Like they were obviously trying to do a Guardians movie, but you know what I mean? And yeah. I know it wasn't all necessarily that director's fault. They pulled in like some trailer company, right? To recut the movie and shit. But you know, it had like the really bad music drops in it. And stuff. Like it was really obvious what they were trying to do. And then for them to be like, you know what? That failed so miserably. We're going to go get the actual guy we were copying. I kind of respected that. And then it also was on the tails of him having his little brief fallout with Marvel. So, yeah. You know what? I was kind of excited to do it. I like, you know, a lot of the people. I saw Taika Waititi is going to be in it. And I think John Cena playing the character he's playing, I thought had promise. Michael Rooker, Idris Elba, all these actors that I have some fondness for were going to pop up in this movie. So I'm like, all right, cool. You know what? This could be fun, right? And I think the trailers look pretty fun. Even though, you know, I don't know any of these characters. And obviously, this isn't, I think it's going to be, I knew it was only just slightly tied into the first movie. If he was having to like clean up the first movie, I wouldn't have been excited at all. But other than just having to know a couple key points first movie, it was kind of its own thing. So I was ready to watch it. It looked at the very least, it was going to just be like a fun, violent comic book romp, right? So that's what I was going into.
What was your viewing experience?
HBO Max, and I watched it with my daughter and my son and my wife because it was Chinese food night.
We were going through a marathon of what were we watching? That she came to my house because I had internet. And oh shit, what were we watching? We're watching multiple episodes of some show I've already watched, and she hadn't seen it. Oh, The Boy. We're watching season one of The Boy. My mom had never seen it, and she just started watching it. She actually got into it, which was really weird watching my mom laugh at The Boys. And so we're watching that, and then I saw it, and I told her, "Do you mind? I heard this movie's on. Can we check it out?" And threw it on there, and sure enough, there's Suicide. So she's like, "Well, let's watch it." So we watched it, and she enjoyed it. She was laughing when you were supposed to laugh, and you know, I asked her, "Did you like it?" She goes, "Yeah, it was good." So you know, big thumbs up from her. Again, for me, I was still kind of taking the movie in the first time around. I was trying to find all the Easter eggs and doing all that shit. I didn't get to really just like sit there and enjoy the movie. And I kept looking over at my mom too, to kind of see her reaction, to see how she felt about the movie. So when the movie, and the next day, you know, I came home from work and stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to sit here with my dinner and I'm just going to watch the movie and like enjoy it. I'm not going to try to look for stuff. I'm going to listen to the dialogue and kind of go along with it. Again, my mom enjoyed the movie quite a bit, which, you know, that's a big plus. You know, she loves Zordal. So, you know, Zordal. So she likes that weird shit already.
I watched HBO Max. Well, how about you, Diablo Frank? Movie theater?
Obviously, I'm very hesitant about any kind of outdoor stuff right now with the Delta spike and everything else. I wanted to be real careful. But I also, this was a movie I really felt like was going to be good for a movie theater. It was very frustrating because I knew at the end of the day, okay, if I can't get like a really sparsely attended showing, then I can't go to the movie theater. But the reviews were coming in and the reviews were good. I didn't read a single review because I didn't want shit spoiled for me. I went off of Twitter because I didn't want anything spoiled for me, which was guaranteed with it. I believe it started streaming on Thursday night. And so it was just like, if I didn't want this movie fucked up for me in some fashion, I had to make sure I just went off the grid for a few days. Why wouldn't you watch it if it's just sitting there waiting for you, essentially? But I wanted to have a theatrical experience. And I kind of, if I was going to take the risk of going to a movie theater, I didn't want it to just be, okay, I'm seeing it on a big screen, you know? So what I wanted to do, since I hadn't done that previously, is I sought out a 4D screening, found one where there wasn't anybody in there. There was just a handful of people in the screening, and finally got to catch it in that experience. Have you guys ever done the 4D before?
No.
Okay. Have you guys ever done like Universal Studios?
No.
Yeah. You have?
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay, so you've done the quote-unquote rides they have at those at that studio.
Oh, like, are you talking about like when you're watching the movie and your seat starts shaking and stuff like that?
Exactly.
Yeah, we did, I think Disney has one too with Stitch. I've been to Universal Studios and however they did it, but I think Disney has a Lilo and Stitch one. We did that one when I took the kids to Disney World.
Obviously, it's going to be elevated when you go to someplace like Disney or Universal, but it's also like if I take Paquito on a roller coaster. We did a few roller coasters when we went to Six Flags a number of years back, and she was heaving after the second one. You know, it's just like she was done with it completely. Not everybody is built for things like roller coasters, but with the way that those are set up, since a lot of it is VR related, a lot of it's wearing, you know, polarizing glasses or wearing something similar to an Oculus where you're seeing 3D and then you're in a a device that's, you know, moving you around, and you feel gravity from when you're being lifted up and stuff. So this was sort of like the streamlined version of that, a more basic version of that. So they tilt your seat back, they rotate you around a little bit, they shoot gusts of air at you. Supposedly they shoot water. My girlfriend was saying that she was getting hit with water and she didn't like it, so she moved over.
4D, for which I never been to one, so I think that was part of the novelty as well. So the 4D, and I was at the very end. The whole destruction of the seat moving, the shaking and everything, at some points it kind of helped me because I was kind of like falling asleep and it started like shaking. I'm like, oh wow, kind of woke me up a couple of times, so just gonna perk me up. So they have this button where you can deactivate the water, so I deactivated it on mine and I was still getting splashed. We're in a fucking pandemic, we're in COVID, I'm in the public space, and of course when I feel some kind of water droplets in my face, my brain immediately goes to somebody spitting on me. You know, so I'm like freaking out of that.
I didn't get any of that, but I also was avoiding it because I'm wearing glasses. I don't need to be dealing with that shit.
So I turned it off on my chair, but then it was keep hitting me, so I turned it off in like two other seats, so I don't have no water whatsoever.
Are you sure it wasn't just some creepy
right, you know, yeah. But speaking of, there were a couple of fucking imbeciles directly in front of us, of course.
And it didn't help that whenever we got there, we have this moron in front of us screaming, like a fucking, at first I thought he was on the spectrum. You know, maybe I thought, well, maybe he's, you know, somebody in need. It's an early showing, so maybe. But no, he wasn't. He was just a moron. Of course, I started getting a little bit panicking because you have this Suicide Squad movie where there's a lot of violence and this asshole just shooting, being like, oh, macho Texan. Of course, I was panicking and petrifying. So as you remember, I walk into the edge of the aisle because I didn't want to be near this person. Besides, we're in a fucking pandemic and that guy wasn't wearing his mask. Once I move into at the end of the aisle, then I was like, okay, well, you know, at least I can have a visual on this guy if he does something.
But the good thing is, because of how the 4D is set up, you're going to be further away from other people than you would be normally. So that helped a lot. I knew it was going to be loud, so I figured they would get drowned out in the midst of all the action that'd be coming up. And mainly though, they just wanted the rumble. They wanted the seat to shake. So as much like a noise they're making during the regular trailers, which I'm not terribly concerned about, once they started flashing strobe lights and shit, then they shut the fuck up and just, you know, giggled like they were supposed to, like fucking morons.
And then when there was some kind of like a wind in the movie, you know, they kind of simulate wind coming from like from the back of your seat, like in the neck area, to kind of move your hair, I guess. And then every time something hit like a staff or they hit something, that like this in the back in your chair keep like something punching you. That was really annoying. It was not comfortable at all. But I think the worst part of the 4D, it was the noise. So you have this movie theater that is pretty loud, but even with the loudness of the movie theater, even still with all the boom, 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 you know, from the movie, for the action movie, you have these seats that they are very loud. So I think they were as loud as the fucking movie. So, and then there was some like, you know, very small, you know, little things here and then. But then there was like this instances where they go into this, like a very long time, so you get distracted by that noise and the movie. I didn't care for it. I am glad that I went to see it in 4D, but I'm gonna say, like, am I gonna go see it in one of the movies that I really wanna see it? Like, no. It's like, we watched the trailer for Dune and I really wanna see that movie, and no freaking way I'm gonna go see that in 4D. Way too much distracted.
During the No Time to Die trailer, they kept doing the strobe lights and it fucking sucks. It's stupid and it takes you completely out of the movie because all they're doing is lighting up the theater. So thankfully, I don't think they use the strobe effect at all during the movie itself. But I wanted to see it during in that elevated circumstance, and so we had to be kind of sneaky and try to find a showing that there was hardly anybody at in a faraway theater where there wasn't as populated. And you know, we're still like, okay, I was literally refreshing to make sure that the seats didn't fill up before we committed to going to the theater, because I just wasn't going to take any chances. But thankfully, nobody else came in. It was just a handful of us, and I was actually able to see it theatrically. So this was the first movie I've seen with an audience since since like 2019, and the second time I've been in a movie theater period since the pandemic.
Congratulations, sir.
So you guys watched it streaming?
Yep, mine only stalled out once. What about yours?
Mine was good. I didn't have a problem.
I heard people that had it stall out so that it became a 3-hour long movie because of all the lapses and stuff. I'm assuming those must have been like the Thursday night crowds, which didn't help, I'm sure. But yeah, it would have driven me nuts to have that happen to me during a movie. I think I when Kong versus Godzilla was coming out, I think I tried to watch some of that and had that happen to me, and I just aborted and went back to it later on.
Go ahead.
I will say we did try and watch some HBO Max on Thursday, and we did have issues, even though we weren't watching Suicide Squad. And I was like, you know what? I bet it's everybody watched that squad. But we watched it yesterday, so it was not bad.
That app, they are dropping the ball with that thing, in my opinion, daily. I mean, it seems like we have problems with it. You know, you'll go to your menu and, hey, I want to watch horror movies. It'll pull up the big list. You get down to D, and suddenly you're in another list, and kicks me off randomly, and it's just, I have another friend around here, it may be my area, I don't know, but I have another friend around here, and he has the same fuck problem.
No, I can speak that too. Max is the one program that, I wouldn't say routinely, but often enough for it to be a consistent pattern, where it'll like lock up, and you have to just completely turn that app off and go back into it again to get it to work again, or it will just not work, and you just have to go off to do something else. So the stability of the Max app is not great, and stuff like this shows it.
It's not, and to the point where I'm thinking about just cutting ties with it. I mean, they have shit on there I want to see, but I get tired of all the having to fight with it every time I want to get on it. So.
Yeah, I really like the selection, and I like the look of it, and it comes with our cable. We're not paying extra for it, at least not as of yet. If they start asking for more money on top of our cable bill, then I might have to think twice about it, but we use it pretty regularly. It's one of the main ones that we use, so while I have my issues with it, I'm not in a place where I'm really to get rid of it or anything.
Gotcha. You see, I'm paying extra for it. I originally had the DC channel, and then they just shuffled me into that, and I'm not going to pay for all this bullshit, you know? So, I don't know. This may be my last go-around with HBO Max for a while.
HBO Max's interface sucks asshole. It is such a pain in the ass to use, at least on my device. I'm not a big fan of it on my device. I mean, the only problem I had, I think, was it Friday or Thursday? I was on Twitter, and James Gunn was doing that. I think it was like James Gunn's birthday or some shit, and someone had just thrown on their, hey, Suicide Squad's on HBO Max if you want to watch it now. And we tried to sign on, and I did have to attempt like 3 times because it just wouldn't work. It literally, like, HBO Max would just keep spinning and spinning, which was the first time I ever had that happen, which I thought was really weird. That was the only issue I had. But eventually, when we got it started, we just started watching it.
I do not have any problems with the app. So.
Are you serious?
I don't have problems with it, man. I gotta tell you, though, I don't think I watch very much on HBO Max. It's probably... it's gotta be a solid number 3. I do Netflix, Disney way more than I do HBO Max.
See, I constantly am trying to turn it on. I have TV on when I work. I have my computer, and then I got TV behind the computer. So really, I want it just for more background kind of shit. But when I'm working and then trying to fuck with the TV, it's just it's a pain for me. So like I said, though, I don't know. Maybe it's my area or my connection. Who knows?
We don't have kids, but we literally watch like the Marvel movies and TV shows, and that's about it on Disney Plus. So that's the easiest one to cut for us. Definitely, it's probably Hulu and Netflix and Prime and Max are the ones we watch a lot, and everything else is such a distant remove that it's not even worth bringing them up.
Yeah, I cut Disney last month, so we just weren't using it. So I never got to see Loki or anything, but
yeah, and we don't have kids, so there's just not a lot there for us, you know, and we're not Star Wars people, so really they just have the Marvel stuff, and that's about it for us.
While we kind of are a Star Wars family, we've watched everything they have on there, so my kids don't want to watch it again, you know, they're old enough where they see it once, they're good, and they don't, you know, they're not into any of the family movies anymore, so it's like, it's kind of an easy cut for us. I wanna settle down. I wanna settle down. Won't you settle down with me? Settle down. We can settle at a table. A table for two. Won't you wine and dine with me? Settle down. I wanna raise a child. I wanna raise a child. Won't you raise a child?
So, continue on. So then they, you know, they introduce Shark. What was the Shark? King Shark?
They call him by his birth name, but I just say King Shark. It's Nanua or some shit.
Yeah. I didn't know what the point of that was.
Much like Vin Diesel as Groot, it's just like this cute character that's going to sell a shitload of toys. It's a pretty easy character to pull off. You're not really going to work your acting chops on it. So, I mean, I thought it was enjoyable.
And it pretty much it didn't like the characters itself. I think the only one that caught my interest was the Shark. I think that was before he became all like friends, or become like Frankenstein. Friends, good. Ooh. And they have like a couple of scenes where like whenever he put his finger on his, you know, to imitate a mustache. I think I got like a little laugh out there. I don't know why. So that was kind of cute.
You know, they introduce him and I'm like, he looks cool. And then he starts talking and I'm like, holy shit, that's fucking Sylvester Stallone. Like, that's not even like, it's not like Vin Diesel doing Groot where you finally, you're like, oh shit, that was Vin Diesel doing Groot. Or, you know, it was, that's Sylvester Stallone with a, who had a, he like a stroke. Like, holy shit, like Sylvester Stallone stroked out and they hired him to do the voice of the Shark. And it was like so distracting. It was really fucking distracting for me, dude. Like, every time I'm just like, he's got more goddamn lines in this movie than he did in like all the Rocky movies. Movies. Like, I've never heard Sylvester Stallone actually talk this much in a movie. That it was like, it was very off-putting and just hard.
And it was so obviously him doing another version of Groot. And of course, a bunch of people have gravitated toward him. And he's so cute, he's so adorable. It's like, oh yes, you know, the accused rapist Sylvester Stallone is going to be your cute, cuddly tiger, your shark character who tries to eat his fellow team members. It's like the cognitive dissonance is very hard to overcome, I'm afraid.
You know, go ahead.
I just forget all that. It was just obviously, Sylvester Stallone has a very obvious, like, his voice is very him, you know what I mean? That, like, over-testosterone supplemented Italian, you know, face smashing sort of like, people have been doing impressions of Sylvester Stallone my entire life, and to have him basically be doing an impression of himself poorly dubbed over a CGI character, it was horrific. It was just extremely distracting. And, like, I didn't get a lot of the, you know, so then we're introduced to, what's her name, Rat Girl, or Rat Catcher 2. And her first scene is like trying to be friends with him or whatever. And I don't know. It didn't. None of that really seemed to work for me. I didn't really feel this touching, oh, I've never had friends. She's like, oh, I'll be your friend. You know, I was like, yeah, that's sort of kind of a
trope. She's the Mantis of the movie. It's really easy to draw lines between the Guardians and the Suicide Squad. She's the overly optimistic, overly idealistic one who's completely out of place. It's just in this instance, they didn't make her the butt of the joke. They make her like the innocent child who's going to help to lead the dark characters to redemption or what have you and shit. Yeah, I that character did not work for me at all. I think the actress, she's a pretty young woman. I think she plays the part well. I don't think the part belonged in this movie. My girlfriend couldn't stand her. Couldn't stand it there. You know, the movie just grinds to a halt to give her origin story and shit. It doesn't work. The relationship with King Shark doesn't work, and the character does not work in the context of this movie. And it's a very minor Batman villain that they're pretending her that she's the daughter of. The character as presented in the movie doesn't exist in the comic books. I don't even know if there's a female rat catcher in the comics or not. I do think it was cute that they played into the comic book conventions of there being second and third versions of characters, and that they actually made that text within the movie. That was part of it, was cool. But every time the movie tried to have a heart, like Guardians has a heart, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work within the context of this type of movie. And I just don't think that Gunn himself had his heart in it. I think that if you watch something like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, it's clear that Gunn is working through some shit. That comes across. I think that's a very heartfelt movie, and it kind of tugs at your heartstrings. Whereas this movie is almost like him trying to do a cover version of himself.
And coming at it from a not good place. Like, you can tell, you know, instead of this being a reaction to being fired from Marvel and then being hired by their competitor, it almost was like he was like pissed at everyone for fucking trying to cancel him and shit. And he was just, you know what I mean? There was some anger, I think, in parts of this movie.
Yeah.
Where, like you said, some of the heart didn't come through, because I don't think he was in that place when he was writing the screenplay. I think he was fucking furious when he was writing the screenplay.
One thing that got me too is they keep referencing children as being a line in the sand. Repeatedly in this movie, the characters react violently to threats, specifically to children, specifically saying that, well, we're going after children, we're doing this to children. And I think that was a reaction to the pedophilia jokes that he made on the Twitter, and him trying to make it clear that, oh no, I don't believe in that stuff, and I love children, blah blah blah. And it's like the lady doth to protest too much, you know. It's like, wait, I don't need you to reinforce this over and over again in the movie as your line. I think that you apparently feel the need to tell me this, and you're feeling the need to tell me this is making me uncomfortable.
I guess that was kind of his way of kind of like, I'm not that. Like, I guess that was his line. Kind of a weird line to draw, but you know, that was his line that he wasn't going to cross, and that's, I guess, what would be their redeeming arc, was because they're doing it for the children. I don't know, dude. I really didn't put that much into that emphasis on that concept. I didn't realize that was in the movie that much. But you're correct. I just thought about it. You're right. They did bring up the kid quite a bit.
Well, yeah, but then he doubles down on it, and to show how bad the Corta Maltese guys are, he has that whole royal family hung, including the kids, with like flags draped over their heads. And I'm like, that was pretty fucking far. You know what I mean? Like, I totally had forgotten about the specifics of why he tried to get canceled. I'm losing track, folks, at this point. Everyone's getting canceled. But you're right. It was because of the goofy, shitty pedophile jokes he made. And I did definitely notice that they kept bringing kids up throughout this whole movie. I think, doesn't Harley Quinn even bring it up? The kids! What about the kids?
Yeah, I'm trying to be better with men, and I'm looking for red flags, and threatening the children was my red flag. And
yeah,
the whole fucking speech is like, okay, we get it. You don't have to keep telling us. We understand.
And also, what the fuck was that whole scene about anyway? She's just captured and then ushered off to this guy's main house. You know what I mean? Like, I kept waiting for his ulterior motive, but it, like, there wasn't some ulterior motive. He literally got her out of the jungle, dressed her up, asked her to asked her to marry him. And I'm just like, wait, this is all serious? And it's because he wants, like, what? Because she's become some heroine on this random island?
Maltesians and shit. Like, yeah, that not only was that, like, the writer's hand very obvious, but also, just to clarify, because it's, I can be very critical, and a lot of times people think I dislike a movie when I like it and vice versa. Overall, I enjoyed this viewing experience, but also if you're trying to find a point where the movie just comes to jumps the shark and becomes definitely like lowers its esteem in my eyes, it's officially when they flash back to Harley and then spend too much time with her in a nonsensical, non-funny tangent.
So yeah, so the whole movie is just like, the jokes didn't do it for me. And then it got worse when Harley Quinn started showing up. I don't care about that character. And I know that a lot of people have a lot of hard on her, and that's fine. You know, you go into any comic convention, there is somebody, always multiple people dressing as her. But just the character itself is just too too girly talking and too annoying for my taste. And whenever the first group got murdered, right? Got massacred, I was like, oh well, is she's gonna die in here? So that's kind of like the twist of the movie. But then of course it didn't, because that's kind of, I guess, is the start. So yeah, so I was like, okay, well, fine. At least it's not the only character.
Did you guys watch the Harley Quinn cartoon, the series?
No, but here's where we would cut Mr. Fix-It-It.
Yeah, exactly.
Loved that shit, didn't
For the record, dude, I tried to watch it with my girlfriend to see if it's something we could maybe watch during dinner. We watched the pilot, and while I still intend to go back to it, she just was not into it. And based on the pilot alone, I was not into it. I feel like it'll go someplace later on that I might be able to hang with, but based on the pilot alone, it was a pass.
All right, well, I'm with Fix-It. I loved it. Okay, so going from that with her and King Shark, and I love the way that the voice actor does Harley, and going into this with Margot Robbie and Sylvester Stallone, that kept taking me out constantly.
Yeah, why does a Hawaiian shark god have an Italian accent? And why, after literally being in 3 movies, has Margot Robbie not figured out what fucking accent Harley Quinn is supposed to have and stick with it? Because I'm getting a strong Cyndi Lauper vibe this time.
Thank you. So I was going to ask that. I never saw Birds of Prey. Is she like this for the entire fucking movie in Birds of Prey too? Or is it toned down to a different level? Or
no, she's... Yeah.
Was it as bad? I haven't seen it. I don't plan on it.
I think it was, but like I said, I literally have very blasé memories of that movie. I just enjoyed it because I was with my daughter. So
okay.
Yeah. You like her in the comics at all?
Oh, in the comics too. I personally, again, me and Fryhawk were joking about or laughing about this one day where they showed the Harley Quinn cartoon, and I remember thinking, we were both watching it, and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to hate it because they're cursing. That's so stupid. And, you know, I fucking fell in love with that fucking cartoon. I mean, it's by far one of my favorite to watch.
Well, we can move on from that. But yeah, I just, I want to just like...
Hey, where did Rick Flagg's Houston accent or Western accent come?
He was very Western, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He twangy, yes. Which I don't remember that from the comics, and I don't even remember it from the first Suicide Squad. I think maybe he had a little bit of twang, but he had a lot of twang in this one.
But yeah, so I just, like you said, Diablo Frank, if I could talk correctly, I did not hate this movie, but there were some very hateable parts in it for me that I'm just trying to get out of the way. And that whole scene, I was just like scratching my head. Now, her escape after she kills the dude and she gets the guns and she's doing the spinning in the hallway and she's capping all these guys. Oh, that was a great action scene. That was terrific. She was kicking those dudes' asses and, you know, choppy, choppy, stabby, stabby, shooty, shooty, kicking gates that are flipping backwards and forwards, and she's flipping into the cells and out of cells. And then when it does the cartoon flowers and shit everywhere, I was sort of more focusing on why the fuck it was doing that.
Is that because she's crazy? I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, where the hell are all flowers coming from?
I think that was supposed to be because she's insane, but it never happened any time before that and never happened again after that. So I don't remember that happening in the first movie, but I've tried to forget the first movie quite a bit. So
it definitely happened in the first Suicide Squad. I think that they made reference to that being something that maybe happens in the Birds of Prey movie. And so it might have been a callback to that.
Okay. Sure.
I kind of feel like it was maybe a trailer moment because it was relatively brief. And as you said, it's not something we see again. So yeah, it feels a little left field and shoehorn and stuff. My problem is all of a sudden, and I'm not the only one who made a point of mentioning this, but like seriously, she becomes Martin Riggs for a scene there. I mean, it's like straight out of the first Lethal Weapon with her hanging off the meat hook and everything else and getting electrocuted.
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. And even the whole snap in the neck with her legs and shit. That's Martin fucking Riggs shit. And I could go with that. That's okay, because they play with that in the first movie where she's always dangling off the shit.
I'm gonna kill every last motherfucking one of you. Yeah. Fucking great scene.
Yeah. But then when she's going room to room killing everybody, my problem here is, and again, I haven't paid attention. I'm not a big Harley Quinn person. I know her from the cartoons and the various media that I've been subjected to as a person who decided to do podcasting about comic book related adaptations. But it seems to me like Harley Quinn's a character who should not be like a martial arts master and shit, should not be like super skilled with guns and stuff. I would think that her whole thing would be kind of like the Joker, where what she's good at is being batshit crazy, and so she comes at you from directions you don't see and pulls shit you don't expect her to pull. But here, like when she's using part of her dress to secure people's arms and shit, she's just doing Black Widow shit. You know, there's so many action heroines that do the exact same kind of shit that she's doing, and Margot Robbie's perfectly fine doing it in these movies, but it's like, why does that need to be Harley Quinn? How is that true to the character of Harley Quinn to have her doing all this gunplay and shit? It just feels like a generic action sequence, with the exception of when she's hitting the guy with the door to a comedic extent where it goes on for so long that it starts to get funny. But otherwise, she's just another action hero. Why are you bothering to pretend like this is Harley Quinn then? And what does it mean to even be Harley Quinn if she's just another action character?
She was in the original cartoon where she was introduced. She was didn't have anything to do with guns, but she was very athletic, bouncing around, fighting. She was almost like the Joker's bodyguard.
Yeah, she definitely was a hench person and a second in command. So she was more physically adept than he was. She danced around. She did acrobatics. I'm cool with all that stuff. It's really down to the gunplay and the martial art where it's like, it just feels like it's too far into other characters' territory, and it deprives her of having her own distinctive qualities.
I do remember in Birds of Prey, she kind of did it along the same lines of that. Like, not as cool, but maybe they were just building off the character, the movie character.
I kept hearing about, the scene where Harley's escaping, it's just amazing. I'm like, you know, now you're going to see the world the way she sees it. And so I'm like, okay, so she sees like fucking Roger Rabbit cartoons and shit around her, and like, that's what makes her so cool and crazy. I was very underwhelmed by that. But again, it got hyped up quite a bit around me, because I kept hearing people talk about, wait till you get the Harley Quinn scene, is so awesome. The way he portrays her escaping and the way she does the kills with the javelin and that. I'm like, okay. And I was just like, I don't remember her doing that in Birds of Prey. Honestly, I don't remember that at all in Birds of Prey. So I think it was in the movie, because she has like the flowers and then the cartoon. I'm trying to think what movie I saw. I mean, I won't lie. The minute I saw that, I thought, hey, Fletch too. Fletch Lives. When he's on the plantation and he has the little singing bird, or I was thinking like Song of the Sun. Like, I immediately go to, anytime I see a scene where you have live action animation, it's Roger Rabbit, it's Cool World. And it's just really weird to me, because I don't know. I guess they're just trying to portray like that's the way she sees the world. It didn't work for me. I personally prefer the original Harley in the Harlequin costume with the hammer and all that shit, or the mallet. I always thought that one was kind of cool and funny. Now she's got this weird fucking Hot Topic edginess with it. I'm just like, eh. But I'm also,
when did she become all paramilitaristic?
Like, on.
Wouldn't she be called a paramilitaristic martial arts gun expert, single shot to the head and heart kind of person?
Yeah. Like, I hate the fact that, yeah, they kind of turned her into that. Where the cool thing about it was, now, I thought it was kind of cool, that scene where she gets the key and does it with her toe and stuff. I mean, that was pretty neat. That was definitely cool. But, I mean, I don't know. I just wasn't that in awe. I mean, but again, I'm not a big fan of that Harley character from the DCU.
Unless you have superpowers, I mean, what else can you do in these fucking movies? You got to be able to shoot a gun and you got to be able to fight. So I don't know what else they were going to do. I mean, maybe she could be like a MacGyverish demolitions expert person. So she could take some of the torture device shit and make a bomb blow the fucking place up. I don't know. It was fine. I don't give a shit.
This is something that happens in comic books a lot, is because you're having to work under editorial strictures and you're having to, you know, oh, you're going to write the Justice League, but you have to have these members on the team and stuff. It really felt like Gunn was writing a character they didn't have a handle on or didn't particularly like, and they basically said, no, you have to use Harley Quinn, and so he used Harley Quinn, but like almost against his will. That's the impression I got from a lot of her scenes in the movie.
But one thing though I will say, as gory and as over the top as this movie was, it was a pussy ass torture scene. Like, I couldn't believe, he was like hitting with us. The guy's like, oh, he can torture you to the, you know, talk about how great of a torturer this guy was, and they're just hitting her with a fucking stun gun. I'm like, is this the Mounties or some shit? Like, he's literally just poking her with the stun gun.
I mean, it is, and a cattle prod.
Like, do it again.
But she's got the one trickle of blood coming down the nose, so that she's still very pretty, and it actually kind of goes with her lipstick. But at least we get to see a little bit of battle damage on the pretty lady, which, as you pointed out, Marvel is not very good about doing.
Well, until Black Widow, that was fine. So I was like, where's the table of knives and shit? And then she could have taken the cut up shit and gone around doing cool stuff. You know what I'm saying? But I was just, that's it? This movie's like blowing people's faces off, and they're poking her with a cattle prod. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. All right. But I mean, the rest of that scene was overtly bloody too, but I don't know. I just thought that was funny. It's an actual torture room, and it was like the most PG torture room in a very, very R movie. I thought that was kind of funny.
Cost me a lot, but there's one thing that I've got. It's my man. Cold and wet, tired, you bet. But all that I soon forget with my man. He's not much for looks, and no hero out of books is my man. Two or three girls has he that he likes as well as me, but I love him. I don't know why I should. He isn't good. He isn't true. He beats me too. What can I do?
Talk about some of the characters. John Cena is so freakishly jacked in this movie that it looks like he's wearing like the clumps fat suit. It looks like he's wearing a muscle suit, dude. Like, I couldn't stop staring at the fucking veins in his biceps. Like,
I'll be honest with you, I was looking at the veins a lot too, but I was thinking more like something out of one of the horror movies where somebody's like supposed to be like expanding too rapidly. One of the Thunders from Big Trouble in Little China or something.
Yeah, dude, like distractingly huge. I knew John Cena was jacked, but this is like, and like The Rock is another person who's like, he's freakishly huge, but The Rock is like a large human being. I don't think John Cena is as big as The Rock. Maybe he is. I don't fucking know. I don't watch professional.
I think his arms might be bigger. His arms look really big in that movie and veiny, but I think generally speaking, no, I don't think he's as big as The Rock. Hardly who is. Yeah, that guy's just insane amounts of muscle on top of muscle.
But I think he's so much, I think he's physically larger, whereas I feel like there's as much muscle mass on John Cena, except he's just a smaller dude. I don't know, just very bizarre. He's a very bizarre looking fellow. And it didn't help. They were putting him in like the super short polos and shit like that to play up how comically large he is. So, but that was extremely distracting. Dude, you got to chill out. We need less vein, bro. What was the other dude, Mr. Polka Dot?
Hold on, before you go there, I wanted to hear from Fryhole on that character.
On Peacemaker? I thought he did okay, man. I haven't seen John Cena in a lot of other movies. I know other people have.
Not that many.
Okay. I thought he did. He played the part he was supposed to play. You know, the dumb...
He played Drac.
Yeah, it was really, again, if we're looking at our parallels, I remember Dave Bautista turned down a role in Suicide Squad to do Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. And I think he chose... well because the character he played in that movie had a lot more going on. Whereas if he had played Peacemaker in this movie, it would basically be Drax retread. And I'd much rather see John Cena bring a different energy to it than have Bautista waste his time playing the same character in a different franchise.
So do you think he did a good job on it? Or should
I think Cena was good for that character. I mean, the character in the comics is different, but also you were never going to get that character in an adaptation. You know, there's a lot more going on with that character than they're going to do in the movies. Maybe they'll touch on some of that stuff in the TV show. In the movie, he's not as obtuse as Drax, but he's very much the same kind of energy for the same kind of ensemble. And so I'm glad that Cena had that sort of all-American jock bro kind of thing going on so that it felt different. I think there's a real problem with James Gunn, as pointed out, taking out his anger at Marvel in basically trying to rip his own self off, cover his own self, and having very similar characters in a very similar type of ensemble. And I think that it helped the movie to have a cast a different actor rather than having the same guy play essentially the same part.
I actually was quite annoyed with Peacemaker. Like, they kept talking, because I kept hearing, oh, he's just like Captain America, but a douche. And I'm like, not really. Like, he's definitely his own type of asshole. You know, I get where he's supposed to be, like, very over-patriotic. I got that. I would say Harley was still annoying as shit. I can never get over that. I mean, he played off great off of Bloodsport.
Yeah, and I didn't have a problem with him as Peacemaker. He had some really good moments when he and Bloodsport are doing their kill-off through what turns out to be, the Freedom Fighters camp. I mean, that was a pretty good scene.
That was funny, yeah.
Yeah, I was just really, the dude's just freakishly gigantic, and it freaks me out. When he looks less believable than the talking shark, become like, I at least know sharks exist. I've seen shark. John Cena looks like something I've never seen before. It's very strange.
I really love seeing the comics costume on screen too, because it gives you that surreality. It's hard to believe that a human being would walk around dressed like that. And so it gives Peacemaker this outsized, crazy quality, because in a movie like this, it works, because if they dressed him up more realistically, he could have maybe passed for more of a Captain America type. And I love that the outfit itself alerts you to the fact that this guy is Cuckoo Puffs. I like that the guy's running around in white pants, and I'm watching him going, how long are those white pants going to stay white? And the first thing he does is slit somebody's fucking throat and get blood all over them. It's like, okay, that's telling you everything I need to know about their take on the Peacemaker. So I think it worked really very much for the benefit of the film to dress him the way they did, but also it added to his surreality.
Yeah, and I thought he had two really, I thought the starfish, that's another word for butthole, any connection? That was pretty funny. And then
I love Ratcatcher and the projector. I just love that non sequitur.
And and then the scene where they're talking about, like, aren't you Peacemaker? And he goes, yeah. He goes, like, and I will kill as many people as I have to mention, you know, I can't remember the exact verbiage of the joke, but that was
I will kill any man, woman, and child that gets in the way of my defending freedom, or something along those lines. And it is a take from the comic books. I think his tagline in the comics was, he loved peace so much he was willing to fight for it. So it very much a Wonder Woman kind of place. But even in the comic books, this dude was always excessive. You know, this is the guy who, he's fighting bad guys, and he immolates them, and so he's watching these guys burned alive, and, you know, in the name of freedom. So this character was always fucked.
I was more intrigued with Polka Dot Man myself, actually. I found his story and everything a lot more interesting.
The Polka Dot one, annoying as hell. The Harley Quinn, annoying.
What'd you think about Joel Kinnaman as Colonel Rick Flagg?
I actually liked Flag a lot better in this one. And again, you know me, there's always that one scene that kind of kills it for me. And this, again, the first one, you know, we're bad guys. Fucking, took me out of the one scene that took me out of the movie is when they have the thinker and they're all taking turns telling them, if you do this, you're going to die. And Harley walks up and is like, if you have personalized license plates or if you sneak. And then he's like, well, you know, don't do that. But, you know, that doesn't give you permission. I was like, that was one of those, you dropped me out of fifth year back in the first year. I didn't like that. And again, I'm nitpicking, but it was really weird dialogue for that scene. Like, I felt that scene wasn't necessary. Like, we get it, they're badasses. Like, don't do that. So I did like the thinker for what little he was on there. I really like Ratcatcher too. I like the scene where she's like, you know, do you want me to have a rat go up where the sun don't shine? He goes, you'd be surprised with the answer. I was like, okay, that's cute, that's funny. Like, that was a really quick quip that I was like, did not see coming. So
it was weird how little Peter Capaldi was in the movie, given how he was pretty heavily promoted in the trailers and shit. I think there's actually a British trailer where he does narration over the front of it, kind of the villain of the movie, but like, really not. I mean, he's just not in it enough. Doesn't have enough of a presence, really.
I mean, I enjoyed him in the movie. I know the Thinker from the Flash comics. I was like, okay, that's pretty close to him, I believe.
What about Taika Waititi as Ratcatcher?
I thought it was a nice touch. That caught me off guard.
I wasn't into it because it was weird for me to, like, it was a distraction. It's like, why is Taika Waititi in this movie? And also, his accent didn't match his daughter's accent. Why would you do that? You
know? They're in Brazil. Sure, they all sound like that in Brazil. That was Brazil, right? I just want to make sure.
I
assumed it was Brazil.
Oh, I don't know, actually. All I know is he's a really bad parent for taking his daughter way the hell up on top of that tall building without any sort of safety gear and shit.
Dude, he's a libertarian. Like, there's no rules to them.
He was a junkie. They live on the fringe. I don't know about a libertarian. He was a fucking junkie.
Oh, the rat girl. It's like, okay, well, at least they get like a semi-Hispanic person, but did they have to make it like really annoying crying baby? Oh, my daddy. Oh, the rat. Like, that's whole thing. But, oh, I'm going to be your friend. Will you eat your friend? Oh, and all that sweetie thingy. It's like, no. No, it was really annoying. Like, seriously. The shark was the only one who was okay, too. What else? Who else was there? The polka dot. Oh, the peacemaker. Super annoying guy. I don't like that actor, to be honest. He's only show up in the movies that I don't like at all. So I didn't care about him. I would say that from the main characters, didn't care about any of them besides a little bit about the shark and the other guy, the African British guy or whatever it is.
And also, I think we mentioned it earlier, Ratcatcher was the only one that got a true flashback. Nobody else. We didn't really learn anybody else's. You know, we got a little verbiage behind Bloodsport's origin. We got a little, I don't think we got anything. Peacemaker didn't have his own show.
Going back to the Ratcatcher, that was such a weird character, man. She controls rat, but not put that away. Like, if you're assembling a squad of basically Suicide Squad, it's supposed to be a squad full of badasses, right? Or just people that can get the job done but are expendable. She was like a college student, just wanted to sleep, was very, you know, kind-hearted and kind of naive. She didn't fit in this movie for me at all. I was like, I don't know what they were trying to, if they just stuck her in because it's like, oh, well, there's another girl.
You know what? And now that you're mentioning that, I think that would have been another nice thing to have in this movie is have Waller have to justify the composition of the team. You know what I mean? Where she's trying to fit, we're going to need, like, and it's, you know, because she can use the rats to chew through, like show me why these people are useful, right? And why you put the team together. And they only do that briefly where they're saying why she wants Bloodsport, but then they kind of do the whole thing where Peacemaker does everything he does exactly the same. Ha ha ha, joke. But then, like, the rest of it is like, no, well, tell me why. So you need her to control the rats, to sneak in, to chew through coaxial cable to kill the surveillance stuff. Because that's really the only time she kind of uses her, where you're like, oh, that's why they would have her along. She can control the rats to go into small spaces and stuff like that. I think that's a whole other montage I would have rather have in the movie, is her going through her trading cards of shitty criminals and saying why I want to put this guy with this guy with this girl. Why are we picking the slacker 13-year-old to control rats? Here's why. Because this is what Waller does. She knows how to put the right combination of shithead together to get the job done.
Yeah.
And that's just a whole other thing.
Those choices just, I mean, I understand, like, we're going to throw the expendables as a distraction, but yeah, I mean, as a, if you're a tactician at all, why would you ever choose her? And so, it would have been nice to get a film more about her and how she comes to her choices, and I don't know.
Have we talked about everybody except for, is it Polka Dot? What's his name? Dr. Polka Dot? Mr. Polka Dot?
Yeah, the Polka Dot Man.
Polka Dot Man. And this was another thing. This happened a lot in this movie.
Hey, by the way, it's David S. Malchian, who people would know from the Ant-Man movies, I would think. And I'm sure other things, but it was in the comic book sphere. That's what he's known for.
I think he was in, like, hasn't he been in every, like, comic book movie? He was in, like, Gotham, and he's been in all sorts of comic book shit. I the visuals were cool. I thought bomb joke was funny the first time, and then it was funny maybe the second time, and then when they did it like the sixth time where everybody's his mom, I was like, damn, like, this movie's not that long to make the joke this many times. And you know, they did that a lot in this movie where I just felt like they kind of kept doing the same. They picked two characters and they would have a joke, and then they would make like the nom nom joke for the shark eat. Oh, nom nom, no, not a nom nom, okay, we're gonna make that joke half a dozen times. And then it was the Bloodsport and Peacemaker, which one's a better shot joke, well, we're gonna make that half a dozen times. It was like they really just hammered on these few jokes they had over and over and over again, and that was something that really kind of got on my nerves, that it was just like, we don't need to keep, yeah, okay, we get it. He sees everybody as his mom, and they just use the effect over and over and over again. And the first, like I said, the first couple times, I thought it was funny and interesting, and then by the end, where now Starro is his mom, I'm like, okay, I got it, cool.
I think the bar scene was the problem. I think that if he'd done the one shot where he sees the team as his mom, and then they paid it off a second time by seeing Starro as his mom, it would have been good. But because he sees all the people in the bar as his mom, I think that's the overkill. But really, the whole bar sequence was so gratuitous and overlong.
And
what's funny, bar scene, dude, let's go to that, because that took me right back to the first movie, and all of a sudden I'm like, dude, they're retreading a lot of the shit they did on the first movie, and it may be trying to play that way, that yeah, this part sucks and we're gonna redo it. Dude, it just didn't work.
Well, I think that because they had the bar scene in the first Guardians too, where it was a good bonding moment when Rocket just has too much to drink and he just gets extra abusive and shit, and that's a very revealing moment for his character and for Drax's character, and that's doesn't happen in this movie. They also did a bar sequence in one of the cartoons, so it feels like it's maybe a bit of a theme for the Suicide Squad in adaptations, but watching it here, it just didn't bring anything. You know, there's no reason why the Thinker couldn't just walk into the bar a moment later, maybe after the round of drinks that the Rat gets a drink, and just skip that sequence. I think that he's wanting to give you a vibe and he's wanting to get you into the characters, but once again, it's more like going through the motions. You don't feel it because you're not feeling the same connection to these characters that you did to the Guardians, and so spending this extended period with music, you know, music montage, it's just feels very gratuitous. It's again, it's like with the Harley Quinn flashback, it's, we don't need it here. And it's, you know, I watched it again on HBO Max, just to not watch it, I didn't sit down, but like it was on in the background, I kind of passed by and watched it, and all the sequences that bothered me that felt really long in the theater aren't really that long, they're usually only a couple of minutes, but in terms of what they do to the momentum of the movie, it just drags.
The pinnacle of all is when they were in the bar, no, before that is when they were in the fucking boss, and they was like, why you don't like rats? And the girl start talking about the story about the rats and the homeless dad, and it's just that whole story, like, play a fucking violin, please. It's like so cliche, so smooshy. It just didn't felt right, you know, it just felt so annoying.
Well, you do know he, again, top 10 list, the creator of Trauma was in the movie as well.
Yeah, he's in the bar sequence, right?
Yes.
Lloyd Kaufman? Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I didn't see him personally, and I know what he looks like, so I just...
Oh, no, I did see him. The scene where they're walking in, I remember he stood out, because I'm like, who's the other white guy? Because
I think, you know, part of it
they
too...
stood out. They stood out pretty big in that movie, and I'm like,
I will say this. I immediately saw Palm Clementa, because I'm looking straight at her, I'm like, that's Mint, right? Because there's no reason why this Asian-looking lady right should be in this Latin country, and the camera's on her way too long, and apparently people were like, everybody missed this. Like, no, she was right there. Sorry, I didn't think anything of it. I just like, what the hell is she doing there? And then nothing ever happened with her.
Yeah, no, I definitely caught Mantis right off the bat too. Because I kind of knew he was going to try to sneak a lot of his... He has like, you know, his kind of like Tarantino. He has this little cast of actors he likes putting in movies in. So honestly, it was fine. Get the rat a drink. It's cute. Fucking Polka Dot Man seeing his mom grinding on him, dude, was fucking... I'm telling you, every time that happened, I laughed out loud. I thought that... And again, it was... Yes, the joke kind of ran it the course a little bit, but I just thought it was so fucking hilarious. Am I the only one that thought that, or did the guys bash on shit on that?
The guys bash it on that. This is why I wanted you, is because I wanted to get that different view.
I thought it was hilarious. I don't like killing people, but if I imagine it's my mom, it makes it easier. Dude, my mom laughed out loud. I'm like, oh my God, it's all fucked up because he's a serial killer. My mom also likes Dexter, so, you know, she has a very dark sense of humor. But I just thought that was really weird where he's talking about, like, you know, I can only kill if I imagine it's my mom. And then they showed his mom. I actually did like the King Shark mom, too. I thought that was pretty funny. Look,
the whole
scene
in the back.
Yeah, but the King Shark one specifically, she was gray and she's kind of like, you know, swatting some little things. I just thought that was hilarious. I was like, holy shit, like, this is pretty fucked up.
Yeah, I do want to give a shout out to that actress too, but she doesn't have any lines, but she plays it so well and she's so perfectly cast. She absolutely has that presence, that overbearing mom presence, and you can just see it, you know, the physical acting is perfect for that role.
I thought she was great.
And then the whole thing about when they were in the bar and they were laughing and drinking and dancing and all, like, creating this friendship, it's like, okay, that is way a lot obvious. It is just, I know what you're trying to do here. I know what your point is, but you're overdoing it. You're like, especially the shot, like the scene when the polka dot guy drank and then he's like, oh my God, it's so strong. Like, he made that and everybody was laughing. Can you be more fucking cliche on that? Like, that's like fucking nerd comedy 101, trying to be cool with the other cool kids on the ground. It's like, seriously fucking insulting. So that whole scene about the bar was really annoying. So that time I was by that time, I was pretty much like check out from the whole movie.
And okay, so maybe I spaced out and missed it. Why were they in the bar? Did they get tipped off?
Same thing happened with Paquita. Part of the intel was that the Thinker liked going to a gentleman's club in town, and they were basically staking it out until he showed up, but she forgot to. So obviously they didn't do a great job of that, or you'd lost thread, because it's not exactly the most plot heavy of movies.
Yeah, I was just like, why are they here? Shouldn't they be going on with the mission? Aren't they going to go blow the fucking place up? Why do they need, like, but yeah, you're right. They did mention that at some point. Yeah, I did not put two together. Again, it doesn't really matter. Can I mention something else I really did like? I did like the changing of settings, how it would do, you know, like the 3 days earlier, and it's in the soap on the toilet, it says now, and it's in like the leaves and sticks that are washing up on the beach, or later on where they're at Jotunheim, it's the staggered rooftops of the top of that roof at a certain angle spells Jotunheim, and then the camera pans up, and it's just the top, the topography of the skyline or whatever. I really like that. I thought that was cool that they ran through that. Now, did maybe overuse that a little bit too much too? Yeah, maybe, but it was something different, and I appreciated it.
I mean, it was cute. It set up all the scenes. It wasn't distracting. I thought the one where they're, you know, Operation Jotunheim, and then it blows out, and it says Operation Harley or whatever, Rescue Harley. I thought it was cute.
I love that they were willing to make a stylistic choice like that that was either going to hit or miss with folks. I thought it hit. I really enjoyed the integrated title cards. I like that you got the sense of, like, chapter play. It was almost like the movie had video game qualities to it, and I think having the little pauses to go, okay, now we're on chapter Jotunheim, now we're on chapter Harley Quinn. I even liked where the smoke is spelling out one word, and then because the mission changes, it spells out a different word. All that was cool. It was a stylistic choice that I think worked really well within the context of the movie.
Very Tarantino-ish.
I mean, having the titles is sort of a thing they do now. I think everybody just, I don't know if it's kind of a shortcut to let people know where you're, like, it is a shortcut, right? You don't have to have characters explain what the plan's going to be now. Now it's just Operation Save Harley instead of Operation Go to Jotunheim or whatever. You know, you just change the title on screen. Or they're at a planet and they call it Vormir. Okay, well, we know they're at Vormir now. The characters don't sit there and say it, and, you know, I just think that's kind of a thing. But at least I like the integrating it.
But as Fixit mentioned, one thing that was distinctive about this movie versus most superhero movies was that it's not linear, that it's jumping around through time. And I think those title cards, particularly with the toilet seat early on, with the 3 days earlier bit, you need to know that, because I think it would throw a lot of people for all of a sudden they're back at Bell Rev and Pete Davidson's alive again and shit. So I think it was a smart choice to do that, but also it gives you the vibe of the movie by having those titles, because I don't know, it feels comic booky and it feels like a heightened reality, which I think they're trying to sell, but it also, it's, I think, essential in orienting you to all the time leaping around that occurs.
Yeah, but my point about calling it Tarantino is that Tarantino never says in part two of Pulp Fiction that this was 3 days earlier. Like, they never say, you have to put it together, like, oh, okay, this was before this was after this, whereas they're literally telling you, you know, 6 minutes earlier, you know, and then they're going,
well, no,
so you don't
did,
have to
he he did that. Tarantino did that in his last cowboy movie.
The Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight.
Yeah. Okay. I guess they did do that in Hateful Eight. Okay. No. You're right. You're right. All right. I got you. No. So yeah, I like the title cards. I thought it was cool, and I like that it wasn't just a black screen with some white letters on it. It was actually, you know, they put some thought into how it would. I thought it was good, and they were all like still crazily legible, right? They were. So they did a good job.
I was good with it.
I won't lie. When I first saw the trailer, I thought the movie was going to take place during the 70s when they were in the third world country or the fucking, not third world country, like, I don't know, whatever it was. Like, you know, I guess their version of Cuba. I really thought that was going to be like the Suicide Squad's been around since the 70s and they were going to do some kind of fucking, I don't know what I thought. It just, the movie felt a little disjointed in terms of like the look. I really did think that was like going to be something about the 70s. That was just my dumb ass, I guess.
No, it would be cool to see that. I'd see going there with that.
You know what? That's another thing I wanted to throw in real quick. The special effects in this movie were fantastic. I really thought Marvel did. Starro looked great. Fucking King Shark looked great. I'm like, did they like pay Marvel to do this movie? Like the special effects at least? Or because they look too good. That or James Gunn stole some programs and shit, like took them with him. And like, hey, this is how we make Guardians look so great. Use this. Because those characters look fantastic. I like, is that what color Starro is supposed to be? Like,
yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things I talked about with the guys is I loved they kept the classic comic book color scheme and were so bold with it. And yeah, the effects in this movie were absolutely Marvel level. Just completely blows away any of the stuff we've seen in the DC movies. And part of it might be that they weren't doing everything last fucking minute. And in fact, they might have had some extra time because of all the delays to, you know, fine tune it and shit.
Well,
but yeah, I loved like when the Starros were coming out of the armpits and stuff.
Yeah.
It all looked so great. I think the effects of this movie are unimpeachable.
This is going to sound weird. I like the way Starro walked. He wasn't like a fucking Patrick the Starfish SpongeBob shit. He actually kind of like would move in a circle. Like he didn't walk with like two of his tentacles or feet and two were hands. You really never knew where his hands, like which one was which. Because there's a scene where you see him and he kind of does this like cartwheel where he's moving. And I don't know why that stood out to me. I was like, that is such like just this little bit of detail that put a smile on my face. That's so cool that he just doesn't start walking like fucking Patrick the Starfish, which I like. And again,
yeah, it makes sense that Starfish would be omnidirectional. You know, they're used to existing in a three-dimensional space. So the only thing that gets me is he's on land, there's no gender to a Starro. They would normally be flying in the comic books, but I like that they played around the kaiju thing and having Starro walking around and such. And I did like the physics of that. It all makes sense to me.
Can we get to Starro? Okay. What do we think of Starro?
Dude, I love Starro. He made the whole movie for me. Just to see him on the screen, I've always liked Starro as a character and that the whole invasion of the body snatchers type shit. When he's freaking shooting him out of his armpit and everything.
Starro's my favorite character in the movie. Just as simple as that.
Favorite character? I'm still with Polka Dot Man on that one.
I thought the look of the actual Starro on the faces, but the eye is looking around, right? Because the eye is looking up and down and over at people and stuff. Can't see the pupil's eyes anymore. And you realize, oh, that's Starro looking around. I thought it looked fantastic. I thought it looked really good. I really like the Starro, like House of Horrors lab where they'd been experimenting, where that dude was cut in half and the Starro was still alive. Or they pulled one of them off that person's face, but the little tendrils were still stuck in there.
His little face like had the star part missing. That was cool.
I really liked all that stuff. Great visuals on Starro.
Loved them. Don't know why. I thought it looked great. I love the way he communicates. I'm telling you, we're going to see that all over Comic-Palooza next year if we have one, please God. But if there's any con, there's going to be fucking Starros everywhere. There's going to be there's going to be a theme punk Starro, a Joker Starro. I'm calling my shot right now. Get your cameras ready.
Grimace dressed as Starro.
I'm telling you, dude, there's going to be a punk theme Starro. Definitely a Joker. Oh, fuck. A Deadpool Starro. I see it now. There's some asshole right now putting that costume together thinking, I'm so edgy. I'm so cool. I'm going to mix the two companies together. I'm going to be Deadpool with a Starro. I'm calling it now, man.
When I realized that Starro was going to be in the movie from the trailers, I think that was my line. That's what sold me. When we're watching the movie and they do the flashback sequences where they're watching the archival footage and you see the smaller Starros start to manifest. I literally did like a two-fisted fist bump where I was just like, yes, Starro! I was so excited for that. I love, like, in the 90s when Grant Morrison brought Starro back as a part of the JLA relaunch, and they just decided to make them all green, and they just looked like lizards with eyeballs and stuff. I was fine with that because that was a time period where they were trying to bring the Silver Age qualities back, but also make him more modern and more cool. I adore the fact that they went with the classic coloring with the purples and everything, and the weird contrast of that, because Starro looks like nothing else we've seen in one of these superhero movies before, and this movie does, especially by the end, start to go to places that we've seen a bunch of times in these movies, but nothing looks like Starro, nothing acts like Starro. The body horror of not only the testing sequences that we saw, but also when the town is attacked by the Starros, they all go down and they all start rising back up again, where it becomes a quasi-zombie movie for a minute there. All that shit I fucking adore, but as you said, I just love that they committed to the design, they committed to the color, they committed to the weirdness of it. It was cool and scary and just awesome. When Starro would speak to, you felt for that character, you felt for what that character had been put through. I feel more bad, and I feel like there's more of an arc for the Starro character than there is for pretty much anybody else in the movie. So totally sold.
I won't lie, the scene at the very end when he looks at him and tells him,
yeah, I mean, what did he say at some point, that how he was so peaceful just floating in space before these goddamn humans found him?
I was so happy floating through space, staring up at the stars.
Yeah.
Last words before death.
Holy shit. I was like, did Starro just break my heart a little bit? Like, my heart just broke a little bit. That hurt. Like, you realize he didn't even want to come here. Like, he's just floating in space, checking shit out, and these people yank him out and start torturing him for like the next 30 years. And I'm like, oh shit. Like, I feel so. Even Starro really wasn't a bad guy. If you think about it, they were just reacting to the circumstance they were thrown into. I thought that was great. Fantastic.
Yeah, I absolutely love that moment as well. And I was thinking about that. I was like, Starro's kind of a trauma victim and isn't really necessarily conscious of the individual lives of all these people, may not even have a concept of individual lives. And just like having this outburst when finally, you know, breaking free from the prison where Starro's been tortured for 30 fucking years. I was actually kind of on Team Starro. I recognized that there were innocent people being, you know, in its way, but it's like, I still, you know, I understood where Starro was coming from. So kudos there.
And then James Gunn, of course, has to do that scene where you see all the Starros landing on people's face and you see a little girl running in the crowd. You saw that, right?
I saw people. I didn't necessarily identify a specific child or anything, but
yes,
it doesn't surprise me.
There's a little girl running while Starros are landing, and I'm like, oh, you bastard. Like, I get that was his fucking, you know, you have to feel bad. Like, this is why we have to destroy Starro, because he's doing this. Like, this little girl is going to have a starfish and be, you know, ruined forever.
For a half a second, I was wondering if they were going to have the balls to just let the Suicide Squad walk away from the devastation. I was rooting for them walk away.
I knew they would do that shit. No way in a million years.
Oh, and another thing, Star. Too, was so awesome.
The only thing that I like about the movie is that there's a lot of accent. It was not just a typical, you know, American accent and stuff like that. It was a lot of different variety of accents, which I was okay with that. I like that a lot. But I'll tell you this, I was more interested on the supporting character. Like, there's this Presidente, the main guy. He's actually a very good Mexican actor. He's been acting for like forever, and he's great. He does a really good job, and I know he's Mexican. And the hot guy, you know, the hot guy who was, you know, going on with like this Harley Quinn whatever romance was going on, that was really annoying. He had an Argentinian accent, so I know this is all the guy. So I don't know where this island, this fantastical island, is from comics. I think you say like it's not real, fine, but at least you have to place it somewhere geographically, right? And so I was like, okay, well, that guy's speaking like an Argentinian accent, and that guy, I think he's too. We'll see how the Mexican actor does. And he actually tried to recreate an Argentinian accent, for which it was so amusing to me because I didn't expect that at all. So pretty much the main leader of the rebel group, whenever they kill all their like people, and then he's like, you killed all my people. Pretty much everybody else besides the Suicide Squad was way more entertaining to me than the actual group.
The sequence when Jotunheim is falling apart and the Starros are landing on the soldiers' faces, and the general sees that he's losing and he just starts to break down. He doesn't cry, but you can see the lip quivering and just sort of like looking around, realizing that all of his dreams were turning to ash. It was such an excellent moment, and it's something that could be so easily missed. There was a lot of subtlety in his performance, and I just have to give the guy kudos for that. That was so well done.
That guy's a pretty good actor, man. I watched him in, he was in The Strain season 2, 3, and 4, I think. I don't know if he made it till 4, but he was in The Strain, Vampires Are Taking Over the World, and he was an old retired Mexican wrestler, and he plays a real good character on that show. So yeah, I was happy to see him in the movie.
I thought it was good. I didn't have any problems with him at all. So I thought the first Argentina dude was kind of creepy, so I wasn't so upset when he was out of there.
It's a Corto Maltese, by the way, is the country. And the thing is, I think that's in the comics. I'm pretty sure it's in Suicide comics in particular, but they got that from European comics. I can't remember the actual writer, but it's one of the Spanish or Italian comic creators did a bunch of stories set in this fictional land of Corto Maltese, and I think it ran in Heavy Metal, in fact, for a while.
Oh wow, deep cut.
Yeah,
the rest of the movie, action, stabby, you know, trying to be like the US government, it was like implications and their crimes and all that. Everybody knows that, so it's like that's so cliche as well, so I didn't care. And the funny thing is that after that scene in the bar, they start showing up this guy, for which in my mind he actually looked like Mr. Fix-It. And it starts showing Milton, whatever, they never mentioned his name before. This guy started going with them into like following them around, and I just keep thinking, it's like, did I miss somebody? Like, is this like a character that they pick up in the prison? Who is this guy? And you know me, I am not good at facial recognition. I am actually pretty bad, but I'm just like, no, one, two, three. It's like, this guy is extra, so where did they pick this guy? So then I start feeling bad, because it's like, I am so checked out of this movie, because so ridiculously, like, ridiculous movie, that I was like, maybe I miss where they pick up this guy. Like, did they say the story? Did they say why it was there? And this whole thing, I was just keep, every scene he showed up, I just keep thinking about him, right? And then when they kill him, when they were like in the offices, and that whole joke about, it's like, who? Milton who? And it's like, okay, well, that was part of the joke. Well, I'll give you that one. That one was funny, because they even got me, because I was like, why is this guy running around with them? Who is he? And it's pretty much that was the joke. So I'll give them that one. And the whole scene about the little stars in the face, it's like, I thought, like, the first image that popped into my mind is like, oh, wait, that is from Aliens. I think I remember asking you before, is that comic with this villain, it was like before or after Aliens? Because I just don't know, right? Because it was very alien-y, because, you know, they were in space and the attached to the face and all that stuff. So pretty predictable. The staff thing or the javelin, it was really annoying. Oh, what do you want me to do with it? I don't know. Well, I'm going to carry the whole movie and I don't know what it's going to be doing. Yes, you're going to be using it to kill the star. Yeah, you're going to stab it in the huge eye in there. Predictable. But at that point, I'm like, you know what? I don't care. And the worst part, you know what it is? I didn't have my popcorn to at least be entertained with popcorn. So I was just there.
Starro, good. Although he did rehash where Harley Quinn jumps into the large kaiju and then carves her way out, and then she's crawling out of it all covered in blood and guts like Drax did in Guardians 2. But that's fine. No big deal. I thought the rats crawling, like, although it was dumb, like, there's not that many fucking rats. Okay, let's chill. Come on.
The rats. Wait, the in general or like in the city? So, like, one of the things that this whole thing about, oh, the stores are coming and they are controlling us, and then the girls start summoning all the rats, right? Then you have this massive infestation of rats, and then I start like, okay, well, just this, okay, fine. And then it just keep coming and coming and coming, and thousands and millions, I don't know if there are millions, but thousands and thousands of rats. And like, the first thing that pops into my into my mind is like, are you kidding me? In this fucking island, there's that many rats? So it's like a government head or like a fucking star, huge star going in. Like, the rats, that's the main problem. If you have that many rats, it will, people will be dying. So it's like, that's the most ridiculous thing. If they were cockroaches, I would totally believe you. You know, you can control cockroaches and there's so many cockroaches. Okay, you know, they're a lot. That many rats in that little island. And then it's like, not even that little island, in that town, in that small town, because it wasn't even a large city. It was a small town, and you have that many rats. Are you fucking kidding? It's, where are the disease? We're like,
it's an island.
Peter was offended. And there, I think as a Latin American individual, there's a lot to take offense to in this movie. I'm really curious to hear what Mr. Fix-It has to say about that aspect, because brown people are rather disposable in this movie.
I knew Frank was going to get on his soapbox eventually. I didn't really look at Annette Lens. It's a fucking James Gunn movie, so, you know, they were going to have bad guys. I mean, really, let's be honest. No one in this movie is a good guy. There are no good people in the movie. Everyone, even the support staff is in some ways bad, because they're gambling on the on the murders of human beings. So I don't want to say, well, you know, they portrayed them in a negative light. Everybody in this movie was a piece piece of shit. Like, no one was redeemable. Maybe Flag somewhat, because he wanted to get the truth out there. But even, I mean, let's be honest, the main villain in the movie wasn't even them. It was America for making an agreement to bring Starro to the island so that they could fucking do experiments to turn him into a fucking weapon. I can appreciate that everybody was a piece of shit in this movie. No one walked away as a hero. So I don't know if I answered your question or not. Probably not.
And my argument was, I don't think they were big enough pieces of shit. I thought that they were too nice and had too many redeeming values, and I wanted them to be much worse people than they ended up being.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted them to be more boomerangs. I wanted more people that had conflicting interests and didn't get along as well and weren't as friendly and were fucking each other over and being told assholes. And like, Suicide Squad is a very Mark Millar kind of property. So that's an instance where I actually want to lean into the nihilism and the skullduggery and shit. So like, there were like too many good guys and too many like semi-honorable people and shit. I wanted more scumbags.
You thought they were good guys?
They were good relative to what I would have expected from a team like Suicide Squad, yeah.
I guess I didn't see anybody's being good. I thought they were all scumbags, so I'm surprised, but okay.
So how about Joaquin Cosio? I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. As okay, well, we can actually go in order. So you've got Juan Diego Botto, who was the hot Presidente who tried to seduce Harley Quinn. And then he was succeeded by that general guy, the more militant dude. What did you think about those characters?
I mean, they fulfilled their role. I mean, I didn't expect them to like amaze me or wow me in any way. I mean, they were supposed to be, you know, a dictator. One is kind of old school, one is new school. I mean, I got, you know, that made sense to me. Why were they not supposed to?
No, I was just asking. We talked about those guys a lot, more so than I would have expected given that, you know, relatively minor characters, but we tended to like what they did with them. What about Alice Braga as Sol Soria, the rebel leader?
I don't know. I mean, she I guess fulfilled her character's arc, where she's there and she's supposed to be, you know, the rebel leader. I thought that was pretty gruesome when they walked in on the generals and just fucking gunned them down in cold blood. Walked in and like, put your arms down, and one guy moved and they just fucking machine gunned them to death and left. Like, you see the secretary there being splashed with blood. That was pretty cold blood.
Yeah. And since you brought him up earlier, what about Milton?
I thought that was a cute scene where, like, you know, Polka Dot Man he saw Milton as a friend, where everybody else was just like, you know, who's that? And I can't fucking Harley kills it when she's calling the blood sport. Milton, that's not my name. Yeah, we discussed with her. No, that's not my name. I'm like, oh, please, not another one of those. You know what? I just realized that Harley really kills this movie for me.
Is she the problem? Is she the one who's dragging it down then?
I think so. Like, I think the problem a little bit with the movie, in my opinion, is you should feel like no one would walk away from this movie. And I knew for a fact they were not going to kill Harley Quinn. She absolutely was going to be the one that walked away. Everyone else was on, except for King Shark. I knew they wouldn't kill King Shark, because that's like killing Groot. And they killed Groot and he came back as a fucking mini plant. And I just don't see King Shark coming back as like a baby shark shit. And you have fucking Bloodsport, like with a fucking fish tank walking around everywhere with a little baby King Shark in there. So I saw that come. But yeah, she just, I never thought she was going to, even when they captured her, I'm like, oh, they're just going to torture her. She's going to escape. Like, there was never a sense that, oh shit, she can, if James Gunn did some crazy shit where like she got blown up, I'd be like, holy shit, like that's a game changer, DC. You're going to take a character like that and kill him off? Because now it feels like, well, she might pop up in the Batman movie, or she might pop up in the Flash movie because she's still around. It's just, I didn't think Boomerang was going to kill, and they killed him immediately. So I'm like, okay, like, that takes some balls. Okay. They're kind of the big fuck you to the last one. Okay, I got you. But can you do it with Harley? And it came short. He gave me blue balls on that one.
Well, one thing I argued too was comparing like Deadpool and Suicide Squad, since they're both like R-rated, edgier superhero movies. And I think the point has to be made is that Ryan Reynolds is a comedian, and his version of Deadpool is kind of a variation on his own comedic persona. And because he is a successful comedian, it works for him. Where Margot Robbie is an actress who is dependent on the lines that she's given, who does not have like established comedic chops. And it feels like we're all supposed to be laughing at the stuff that she's doing, and it doesn't seem like anybody ever does. So it just kind of feels like broke-ass Deadpool. And I think that that's why Deadpool works and Harley Quinn doesn't.
Whoa, broke-ass Deadpool. Wow. Shots have been fired. Okay.
I was just like, man, is this Manhattan that they're on?
One more thing I meant to talk about. What was the deal with the rat phobia? Was that just completely not necessary? Like, I don't know. To me, that came out of nowhere. And I was like, did I miss something? Why is he scared of rats so much?
If you watch the movie again, he reacts poorly right from the very beginning. He clearly has an issue with rats right from the start. Although at the first blush, I assume, like probably everybody else assumed, it's like, wait, you have a rat on your shoulder? That's disgusting. Get the fuck away from me before it becomes a full-on phobia. But they do explain that apparently his father tortured him with rats and shit. But
okay,
it's right. definitely one of those Indiana Jones things where it's like, oh, you were showing the vulnerability of our lead, and also because he's the one who's getting closer to the rat catcher. But the movie ends on the rat. So I think that it's him trying to be literary, and I don't think it works that great. It's a little too arch. Not a little too. It's a lot too arch. But I think that's what he was going for.
Yeah, I just thought to end the movie on him petting the rat was sort of like, okay, all right. I know it was another one of those jokes they just kind of did. It was just too many times. Like, we just had the rat thing with them crawling all over him to kill like, we just did this with the rat thing. And then they had the rat thing come up where they tell Waller, did you know that Bloodsport has a phobia for rats? She's like, oh, just like, you know, weasel not being able to swim or whatever. And I was just like, okay, this is another one. We're doing this. Every joke has to be done like six times in this movie. But I thought the effect of the rat swimming into the eye and then like digging into the big like vascular canals and like crawling into it, I thought all that was very cool and extremely gross.
Yeah, Paquita was really irritated because she'd figured out what the javelin was going to be used for early and just kept waiting for it to happen. And then when she sees the rat swimming around in the aqueous liquid, aqueous vitale, I think it's called, she's like, rat. I mean, she was okay with rats swimming, but them actually swimming in unison toward all the different vascular portions and everything, and then into the brain, she just thought there was and I had made fun of her. It's like, it's a giant starfish, but it's too fantastic for there to be so many rats and for them to be targeted by rat catcher and everything else. But that was an issue for her. I thought it was interesting because, as you pointed out, something similar happened in Guardians of the Galaxy, but I liked it. It seemed like Gunn was almost taking notes from Zack Snyder and trying to do something a little bit different, you know, in the midst of all the sameness that he was doing. I think he was trying to do some moments of actually visual beauty and trying to do something a little bit more artistic. And he's just floating peacefully inside the eye while the rats are passing by her. Finding the beauty in all that, you know, disturbing imagery was an interesting choice for him to make. And I thought that it was well done, if perhaps misplaced, but I enjoyed it at the time and I still enjoy it.
Yeah, like
I thought that the javelin was stupid. I think everybody saw that coming. If you saw the trailer and as soon as she has that javelin, what do I need it for? You're like, get poked in the eye.
Well, that, and how is it that you have the Starro walking away from machine gun fire, but the pointy stick works?
Yeah, I assume it has some sort of magical ability or something. I don't know, dude. It's, yeah, I know. Look, it's called Suicide Squad. You know, let's not try and go too crazy. But yeah, it was very much on the nose.
Now, I was disappointed because the minute javelin, when I saw the trailers and I saw her running with the javelin, I'm like, oh, she's still stabbing him in the eye. Like, that was too easy to get that was going to happen. Unless that was just me. I felt that was going to happen no matter what.
You know, I don't like spoilers, so I didn't watch all of the trailers, and I would typically only watch the trailer once or twice because I try to make a point of not remembering stuff like that. So I didn't remember the javelin from the trailer, so I wasn't waiting for that to happen. But literally everybody who watched the movie was like, yeah, as soon as they saw the javelin, that's what I knew that was going to happen. So I was like, okay, yeah, you weren't alone in that.
Okay, yeah, so they did not hide that well. Disappointed with that.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, I want to double down on what you said. Although it was very samey from Guardians where the hero goes inside, but whatever. I thought visually, like I said, with the rat, I thought it was great. Her floating in there was very, very cool. And then as he's dying, to have his little quote about, you know, he was happiest when he was alone looking at the stars or whatever. Very, very cool. Neat death.
Well, and I also love that they have that practical eyeball corpse for her to climb out of. It just makes them so much more tangible. You feel like she was really inside Starro's eyeball when she's trying to come out of the corpse of the Starro, slimed and with all this like rubbery stuff all around her and shit. It could have been cheesy, but I thought it actually made it more real for me to see that in the aftermath.
I wanted more gore. She came out. Not enough gore. Sorry.
And so you liked the finale of the movie then?
Oh yeah, I thought it was great.
It was nice to have a little, I mean, it's still a bunch of little people running around in buildings that are collapsing and fighting a giant monster and shit, but it's still definitely, especially compared to the first one, didn't feel as much of a retread as so many of these superhero big finales do.
One thing we didn't touch on is what's homegirl's name? Amanda Waller. What about her little arc in this
movie? Okay, I actually do have a note written down from there. That was the biggest didn't make sense part for me, because in the first movie, when shit goes wrong, she fucking executes everyone in the fucking room. And this movie, they fucking crack her in the head with a golf club, and then she's letting them all live, just giving them bad assignments? I don't know. It didn't make any sense. And that may be back to the first movie that maybe that...
He was trying to overcorrect.
Yeah. They realized she had overplayed that in the first movie. But I mean, she still went on that psycho tirade about, you know, you motherfuckers gotta get in there or follow orders, whatever. But I thought that was such a huge departure from the first film that, I don't know, killed it for me.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, you know, the whole, every time she would mention the dude's kid, how the staff are kind of looking at each other. I did like when they were betting on who was going to die first. That was funny.
No, I loved her. I thought she was she was the villain. If there was any villain, she was the main villain, because she doesn't give a shit about anyone. Dude, she was going to kill him without conscience. I liked her. To me, that's the wall. At least from what I've seen in the cartoon. I've never really read her in the comics, so you might tell me, well, no, you know, she's a little more sympathetic. I liked her in the movie. She's fucking, her intensity level, holy shit. When she just fucking went off when they weren't turning around.
They took advantage of that R-rating, and she was cussing like I would cuss. You know, I loved that.
Yeah, I was like, that is fantastic. Like, to me, if you're going to curse in a movie, that's the scene. That's why you need it. Don't fucking have Batman say, I'm fucking Batman, or just some stupid, like, just to look edgy and dark. That, to me, was perfect. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, and I love the moment when she told the group to stand down when Bloodsport's coming after her, because you felt that shit. You know, you could hear that person had cowed people back in the day. And I'll be honest with you, my dick shrank a little bit. Just like, whoa, my balls sucked back up into my body for a second there when she did that.
Really? Yeah. I was really surprised how intense she was. Whenever she's like, stand down, turn around. I'm like, holy, I really thought she was going to hit the button. I was like, oh shit, are they going to like, they're going to start popping up? I immediately thought of that scene from The Matrix where Switch goes, not like this. I thought one of them was going to do that. I thought, you know, Polka Dot Man was going to look at Harley and say, I'll, you know, see you in the next, some fucking great word, you know, great line, and then his head was going to explode. And they were going to be like, you know, something, you know, she's going to go nuts doing that shit. But instead, nope.
I'm not really sure how I felt about that. It was strange. Her whole arc in this movie was kind of strange. And then having the whole thing is, it was, you know, Americans were the ones that had Starro trapped on the island and everything like that. I thought that was an interesting twist. And then the whole end where Flag's trying to get the hard drive to give it to the press. He's fed up with Waller. But I still feel like at any point in time, she could have just blown all their heads off. So, you know what I mean? Like, to me, the bomb, the chip in the neck was not nearly as big a deal in this movie as it was in the last one. But
agreed.
Because they were just kind of doing all their own shit.
I liked when she threatened his kid, because that, you know, she's kind of a scumbag.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with that. Yeah, that was all fine.
I thought that was pretty solid. But yeah, there was, besides that very first part with Rooker getting blown up, you know, I mean, did she even threaten it, like, until the very end?
No, at the very end she does, and that's it. Everything's just going fine after that.
I mean, even in the cartoons, she's like ready to click that button 5-6 times during the movie, you know, so.
Yeah, I feel like maybe they should have taken a couple of the people from that throwaway team and incorporated them into the main team,
yeah,
and then pop them off a couple times throughout the movie just to remind everybody. But it's almost like, you know what, but okay, but here's where I'm second guessing myself here. This movie does take place, all of these folks have been on Suicide Squad multiple times at this point, right? So in the first movie, that was the first Suicide Squad. Well, at this point, it's so old hat that the staff are taking bets on who's gonna die first. So then maybe the bomb in the neck isn't that big of a deal, and maybe she doesn't have such a short trigger anymore, because she's had these dudes on multiple teams, right?
Well, that kind of explains Rooker, because this was his first time, and he's the one who fucking gets, you know.
No, because it sounded like even he had been on a couple of them, right? Because then they were like, have these two worked together before? Or have these two worked together before? And when they're placing all the bets. So, okay, you know what? Maybe I no-prized myself there. There have been enough Suicide Squadron at this point that she might be a little more relaxed. They've had the bomb in their necks so many times at this point and gone on so many of these missions and survived them all. They're probably a little disconnected from it, too. So, yeah, I'm fine. I just explained that to her. We're good.
This is one of the reasons why I don't like these Suicide Squad adaptations. And I didn't finish watching Assault on Arkham today, but I watched enough of it for reminders. And I remember how they were portrayed in, like, Justice League United and such. I freely admit that the 80s Suicide Squad was not the one that was commercially successful. I recognize that the properties evolved into places that I'm not particularly interested in going into. And I have to respect that those takes have a following. But I have to take exception when it comes to Amanda Waller. more, because I have to call out what I feel is misogyny and racism amongst the people that write her in outside adaptations. And we see it somewhat in the comic books, but not as bad. John Ostrander co-created the character. He has a credit with John Byrne. I don't know how much credit I'm willing to give John Byrne, since I think he was just the guy who drew her the first time. I think that the character was very much Ostrander's. And Ostrander is a person who came to comic book writing through acting. He was a stage actor, and he was known to comic book people through his connections to, like, there was a comic book adaptation of the play Warp, and that was part of it. The comic book writer Paul Kupperberg befriended Ostrander when they were both in Chicago, and actually wrote Ostrander into Supergirl comic books from the early 80s. As a actor first, even though he's good with plots, I think he's one of the best comic book writers, period. But one of the things that makes him so exceptional was that he had a very character-centric approach. As an actor, he tries to figure out who his individual characters are and understand their motivations and understand why they are who they are. And he did such an excellent job of taking pre-existing characters and figuring out why they were the way that they were. Part of the fun of reading his Suicide Squad was to see him come at the Penguin from an angle that nobody had before, you know, come at Dr. Light from a different angle, recognizing what they had done, their continuities, they would have led them to this place and why they were the way that they were. And he's the creator of Amanda Waller. And he created this character around 1986 at a time when black representation was very slight. Female representation, particularly black female representation, was very slight. And in particular, she's also heavy set and frankly not conventionally attractive, you know? This is a short, thick, intimidating woman. I think that maybe there was, I always thought that maybe Nell Carter was a little bit of an influence. What made Amanda Waller so special, besides the fact she just inhabited her form, was something different than what we'd ever seen in comic books from that point, particularly because she's not the villain of the series. And she is very much the villain of these adaptations. Not virtually, all the cartoons I've seen with her and in all these movies, the Suicide Squad specifically has the same problem as most of our movies with the weak villain. Because if you think about it, to some degree, the Thinker is the villain, but he's barely in the movie and he's mostly there as a joke and he gets ripped apart pretty quickly. Starro is a threat, but I don't know that he's really the villain, or it, I should say. It's pretty non-gendered. But what's clear is the primary antagonistic presence in both these movies is Amanda Waller, that these people are dying over dumb government bullshit, and she is the manifestation of government bureaucracy and government dark dealings and shit. She is the evil. She is the bad guy. She is the person who ultimately Rick Flag is willing to sacrifice his life to thwart. And having her as the adversary in these adaptations does a disservice to, again, a character who offers representation that is largely non-existent in comics and outside of comics. What makes Amanda Waller one of the most fascinating characters in DC is the fact that she is not the villain, that she is not the good guy either. She inhabits this gray space where she's a person who is on the totem pole of the social hierarchy. You know, the only thing, you know, what's below a man but a woman? What's below a white person, a brown person, you know, whatever race you are, black people are always at the bottom of the totem pole. And she's heavy set and she's unattractive. She's got all this shit going against her. And so she has a brilliant mind and she's such a capable and ruthless individual that she is at the peak of power that our society will allow her to wield. She's in a role where if someone as smart and as capable as her should be president, she shouldn't be running fucking Task Force X. But this is the best that she's going to be able to do. And she's going to do that job to the best of her ability. But she's not an evil person. These are her resources. She does not see the villains that work under her as disposable. One thing that really bothers me with the cartoons is, like, in the first one, she kills KG Beast just to show that she can. And that's a waste of resources. She wouldn't just toss somebody aside like that, especially somebody capable. Slipknot, killing Slipknot to make a point, no big loss. You know, Slipknot was not adding a lot. If she pops like Savant or Javelin's head, okay, that's something you get away with. But she's not going to do it just because, just to show off. One of the things that's important to the Suicide Squad that they don't have in the cartoons, that thankfully they at least have in the movies, is that you do have the actual military and intelligence agents embedded within the team. That it's not just the convicts, you also have their handler. You've got Rick Flag, you've got the Bronze Hoggler, you've got Vixen, you've got people that are on this team to make sure that they stay right and do what they're supposed to do. There's no value in killing these guys just to show that you can. You got these guys together for this mission for a reason. And even when you have got like a distraction play like you have in this movie, it's a little hard for me to see the comic book Waller doing that, because again, it's just such a waste. But she definitely wouldn't do it just out of spite. She definitely wouldn't kill those guys just because. I don't think that Waller would threaten to pop these guys. She might threaten it, but I don't think she'd pop those guys' heads if they decided to go after Starro like they do at the end of this movie. Because at this point, they've done what she needed them to do. So long as she had the drive secure, so long as one of those people leaves and brings her device, the rest of them can kind of do what they want to, and I think she'd be cool with it. She doesn't want women and children to fucking die and shit. You know, she's not a bad person. She just does bad things because that's kind of the job. And because she deals with bad people. But she's the protagonist in the comic books, and her navigating this gray space and her having to deal with very powerful people with very evil agendas, and her actually trying to do some good with bad people under bad circumstances, trying to make the most of her own existence and the own power that she's been able to claw away from the hierarchy and shit. She's just a vital and brilliant character, and so unique. It's so wonderful in the comic books when she's handled correctly, and almost nobody but John Ostrander can write her correctly. One guy in particular that pisses me off, I've never liked Greg Rucka. I think he's a fucking overrated hack and totally derivative, but also the fact that he did not write Amanda Waller correctly, because he's one of the guys who writes her as a villain. Most of the people who write her as a villain, and that's fucking boring. It brings nothing to the fucking table. Making her an anti-hero, making her somebody who is strategizing against more evil forces, you know, somebody who's in those ambiguous places, having her being involved in spy scenarios, and the simple fact that in the comic books, she takes up a good portion of the comic book. She's the team leader. Yes, she's usually leading the team from a control room, but it's very similar to the way Oracle worked. Oracle, who was very popular in the comic books for years, the identity that Barbara Gordon took on after she was crippled by a bullet from the Joker. So she continues to be a vital member of the superhero community as an intelligence gatherer, as an aggregator, as a person who sends agents like a Black Canary and Huntress on the missions for her. They do the physical legwork, but she's the one who's actually figuring out the data and figuring out where they need to go. And also, of course, you know, security gets compromised and people get into the clock tower or people get into the mission companionship. There's all this other shit that's going on that can threaten her as an individual. She's not in the safety of the prison or some shit like that. She's in bad positions too. She's in bad positions politically. She's in bad positions morally. She's in bad positions where people are actually coming after her and physically attacking her and shit. She's the star of the book, and she is the most consistent presence, and she's the one who's having to negotiate all the really hard decisions and stuff. And so for her to just be the bitch, and that's all they write her as, and as much as I like James Gunn, I'm a fan of his movies, I'm a fan of his writing, he's funny, and I think he does a really good job with direction. He's good at action direction, he's good at comedy direction, he does a really fantastic job. I think, you know, he's somebody who's becoming a bigger and bigger force within film, and I think that he's earned that place, but he's got some really big blind spots. He does not write women very well at all. I think he's got some issues that he needs to fucking work with, and that he lays into Amanda Waller the way that he does. Especially galling because I feel like Viola Davis inhabits that character so well. I think she succeeded CCH Pounder as the best Amanda Waller actor. One of my favorite moments in the entire movie was when Weasel's drowning and she has that slow side eye to the person that she's working with. But again, at the end of the movie, when they whack her on the fucking head to prevent her from blowing everybody's heads off, those people should all be dead if she's in character the way she's portrayed in the movies. And if she's in character the way that she was created to be, she would be the one who's like, okay, you guys got to do what you got to do. She would actually want to help save innocent people because she's not fucking evil. And the fact they just turn her into that, I think it reeks of, again, misogyny and racism. I think that the people who've done that in animation have failed her and failed the intention of the character. I think that it's a knock on their fucking humanity that they fucking do that. This is a great character. You've got a great actor to portray that character, and you turn her into just the fucking generic bitch. She's the fucking president from Escape from New York, or the fucking Lee Van Cleef character. She's just another fucking bureaucrat who plays with people's lives and sees everybody as expendable, and that's so fucking tired and so fucking small, and the wall should be better than that. And I think it's a disservice to Viola Davis as an actress and to the character to portray her in that fashion. And so as long as these productions keep failing who I feel should be essentially the star of these movies, and especially watching the fucking cartoons where they keep trying to make fucking Deadshot the fucking star. Hey, let's find the white dude with the guns and make him the star of all these fucking things. You're just fucking failing as creators and as human fucking beings.
Yeah, you know, and so look, I don't have this allegiance to the character, but I feel like that take would have been way fresher than just running out Guardians 2.5, right? That's kind of what they did, right? I feel like a movie told from her perspective where she's having to make these decisions, or maybe she's the one that uncovers that the United States government was hiding Starro over there and this whole thing was trying, you know what I mean? Instead, she was, like I said, like unbelievably one-dimensional, like 0.5 dimensional in this movie. So I can definitely see that gripe. If she's such a big deal in the comic books, which I mean, I think she is. I mean, I kind of know about her and I don't read any DC comic books, so she has to have more than just some two-bit finger, a thumbs up, thumbs down.
And the simple fact they keep putting her in the cartoons, they put her in Justice League United, they worked her into the fucking Green Lantern movie. Angela Bassett played her in the Green Lantern movie. There's a reason why they keep doing that, but if you're going to do it, why don't you actually get the character right? Why did they keep making her like the Jared Leto Joker of adaptations?
Yeah, you're right. I guess, okay, if they keep doing it, if this is now her third film the DC is produced with her in it, plus all the animation, and they continuously keep fucking it up, then yeah, okay. I can definitely I can have that gripe. And again, like I said, taking it from that perspective would have really made this a different feeling movie too, other than just an action movie. And I think really at the end of the day, that's all this movie is. This is just an action movie.
I will keep the bad things from you. I will keep a straight face, honey. You keep your last name if you want to. I will give you all my money. I can take a plane right to you. If I could just stop running. And what if all this was true? I will keep the bank from calling. I will keep those bastards from you. I will keep your smile from falling. This time the casualties were few. Cause we kept the bastards brawling. We kept our hearts from view. This time we're problem solving. Catch it while you can, it's the feel-good hit of the summer. Catch it while you can, cause there won't be another.
And then the movie ended, and I'm like, okay, well, I came in with little expectations, and pretty much they, you know, it was what I expected it. I did, like I say, I have a couple laughs, for which more than I expected. I live with the same expectations that I come in with. It's okay, I guess, for what it is.
I think this movie would have been better if it was about 15 minutes shorter. I kept feeling like, man, this movie should be almost over, but Starro hadn't really shown up yet. And I'm like, yeah, this is not the kind of movie that can really hold up being over 2 hours long. This is a fuck, shit, shoot, die movie. Those got to be like $1.50, right? To be over two, not for me.
I knew I was going to watch James Gunn already. I knew that the moment the movie started. I had an idea that it was going to be wild and crazy. Now, while I was watching the movie, I did realize that sometimes, and granted, I did love this movie. I think it's the best DC movie ever. But I kept thinking in my head sometimes, is in my personal taste, I do like him when he has bumpers a little bit to kind of pull him back a little bit. I don't know. Again, I get it. It's his artistic take on it, which I enjoyed, but there was just some scenes it was just too much for me. I don't know, it was just me. I kept thinking, you know, what was the analogy I was using? It's like having a banana split, but they just keep adding more and more shit to it. So it's kind of like cherries, your chocolate, and then they're putting caramel and strawberries, and then they're putting pineapple, and they're putting cherry, and I'm like, whoa, like at some points the movie was just a little too much for me, and I just felt it was a little overwhelmed.
I think it gets harder when you're watching a Marvel sequel, knowing that, you know, it's a PG-13, they're gonna have all these kids come in, you know, Disney's the people ultimately shelling out the money, and to realize you're in a robot brothel, and just because you don't get to see the tit, the fact that you have the audacity to even remotely go there in this context and go as dark as that is, whereas in this movie, because Warner Brothers like let him do whatever he wants to, and it's R-rated, he can actually show booby and gore and everything else, it's not as fun because you're not rebelling against anything.
It felt a little too edgelord for my taste sometimes. I was like, I get that you can do whatever you want and that's great, but like, don't depend so much on the ultra violence. Like, I get it, that's probably where the DC movies want to go. I don't think you could do every fucking DC movie like this, because everyone keeps talking about like, oh, this is the new direction of the DC movies. I'm like, no. This is not going to sell toys. Like, you know, DC is about making, just like Marvel, making movies and selling toys.
I mean, there's nothing else here. If you're in for the gore and the cursing, then that's it, because that's really all there is. But there's nothing really fresh about this movie that hasn't been done.
Loved it. It was a little intense. I don't see them doing, like, would you want to see another Suicide Squad like this?
It's just I
don't need, it's not that I don't want to see one. I would like to see one maybe in a few years, but I don't need to see one in like in the next 4 or 5 years. You've shown me your Suicide Squad. That was cool, bro. And you're right. I mean, he can do something completely different.
I'm sorry. I wasn't leaving this film saying, man, I cannot wait to see Bloodsport again. No. Was I jazzed for the Peacemaker show? Honestly, this might have turned me off the Peacemaker show a little bit. Ratcatcher 2, don't really give a shit about. Although some people are trying to bullshit, like she stole this movie. Okay, whatever.
Her and King Shark is like, okay, sure, guys.
Yeah, what? Like, no.
And because he's writing and in many cases directing episodes of Peacemaker, how are you looking forward to the HBO Max series or not so much? Because you sounded like you weren't really sold on him in the movie.
I mean, I'll watch it. I'm not going to be like, oh my, you know, go out of my way to watch it. Do I really want to watch Suicide? That's a good question. I didn't love the character. John Cena, I do enjoy John Cena as an actor. I think he's hilarious. I think he's pretty good. He has some great comedic chops.
Yeah, still need to see Cock Blockers. I've heard lots of good things about that one.
Oh, yeah, Cock Blocks is hilarious. I don't know if I want to watch, you know, that's a good thing. Am I going to watch fucking the Peacemaker series? Because is it going to be just another fucking 6-episode Suicide Squad, you know, Bloodfest? Huh? Are you going to watch it?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. I like the movie. I like the vibe. I like James Gunn, generally speaking. I have no reason why I wouldn't go ahead and watch the series, especially because they're going to be playing around more with the greater DC universe, or really, to be more honest, the lesser DC universe, the super minor characters, obscuros, the types that I like. I'm curious to see how the Snyder stands are going to react to. I haven't seen that online yet.
Oh, they again, love it. They love it. Oh, dude, all the gore and the shitty jokes and people dying left and right for no reason. Oh, they love the movie. I guarantee you they love the movie. 100%. I would be, honestly, I think I was even scrolling through some Rotten Tomato audience reviews, and one of them was, next to the Snyder Cut, this is the best thing DC's done. And I was just like, yep, that's exactly what I was going to see. I mean, this is right there. I you know, this is their Ayer cut, right? I mean, that's basically what's it.
Well, it gets me too, because I have no interest in the fucking Ayer cut, in part because I've not seen any Ayer movies that I give a fuck about anyway. He keeps describing a movie that I would want to see, but at the end of the day, the fact that he filmed that footage tells me what kind of movie he was trying to make and what depths he was able to take those characters to, and there weren't any. If they were going to do a proper Suicide Squad movie in the vein of the 80s stuff, you would have a lot more time spent with the control room people. There was a priest character in particular from the comic books that you'd often have like sort of these confessional moments with, and you'd see him helping the prisoners work through their psychological and emotional hangups and shit. And, you know, Father Kramer, I think his name was. And you had like all these people that worked with Amanda Waller in the control room that like mattered. And one thing I did like with the movie is that even though they're probably doing it to set a Peacemaker solo series with the two in particular, the white girl and the heavyset guy, which is kind of funny too. It's like the black girl who actually whacks Amanda Waller, she completely disappears, but the two white people are going to be in the show with fucking John Cena. Okay. But I do like at least that because they built up those characters, even though they're kind of ripping off Cabin in the Woods. Yeah. But I did like that these guys obviously had their little office things going on, their betting pools, and they're, you know, smack talking each other and all that kind of stuff. I like that that aspect is there, because that's something that does speak to the comics as well. Those, the ground crew is supposed to matter too. When people would come and go from the squad, these were the guys who were the consistent, you know, supporting cast. So I'm glad to see that reflected in the movie.
We got a freaking kaiju up in this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I dug all that. I had no issues with any of that. So yeah, that's where I was at on the movie when I got done watching it. But my wife, who never saw the first Suicide Squad film and has never seen anything having to, even she turned to me probably 45 minutes in and said, just looked at me and said, Harley Quinn is fucking annoying. I was like, oh, I typed it in my notes about 15 minutes ago. I showed her to her my notes. I do not like any character. Like none of them. I don't like any of them. So they could have all been, I should have been like, oh, look how Polka Dot Man dies. And really his death kind of whack at the very end. And then like none of the rest of them died. And I'm like, what? Oh, I guess Flag died, but he's sort of a manila envelope. I didn't care about any of these characters. I honestly, for a lot of me, I kind of actively didn't like most of the characters, which if they were going to be disposable and we were getting off on their deaths at some point, you know, like a horror movie where you have all these bratty fuck kids and it's really about watching the bad guy, how he's going to kill them. If that was how it would have been, then that were. The fact that I'm supposed to kind of give a shit about about King Shark and Ratcatcher and stuff, did not work at all for me. As an action beat, it was fine. I thought the gore was cool. I thought some of the action beats were good. The plot was kind of whack. So it was definitely better than the first. The first one is like shit. The first one is terrible. The fact that anybody ever tried to defend that movie fucking freaks me out. That movie is complete garbage. This movie, at least, it made sense from start to finish. Like, I mean, there wasn't much plot there, but what was there, I fairly well understood, other than like she just randomly in the president's house and they're banging, and then me forgetting about the whole cantina scene. Other than that, like, the movie was very easy to follow. I knew what was going on. You had the little twist in the end for the U.S. government, and that Peacemaker was kind of, you know, had his allegiances to the U.S. government, and then they got that little scrap. That was all fine and good. That, you know, it was perfectly fine. But to me, this movie's not rewatchable. It's not a fun action movie that's rewatchable. And honestly, is it weird? I didn't really think it was that funny. Was that just me? Like,
a lot of the jokes fell flat.
It wasn't really funny, right? Like, I honestly, it was funny. I was thinking about the last movie I'd seen, The Black Widow. I feel like I laughed way more in Black Widow, which was a more serious movie than in this movie that was supposed to kind of be this comedic beat after comedic beat. I mean, I snickered a lot, but I never had like laughs in this movie. And I was trying to. And like I said, I was not going into this movie not down on it. I think I was in the right, but I had had a couple drinks. I was ready to go, man. Like, I was in a very good mood for the movie. Yeah, I don't know. I think in the end, it kind of fell flat. I think it kind of was a little bit worse than what I was expecting, but I'd kind of actually be interested to watch it again just to see if I was as mellow on it as I feel like I am. him. But yeah, like I said, a little disappointing.
I enjoyed it, if not even more, the second time around. I thought it was better.
I feel like this is a movie that's going to, again, kind of like the soundtrack selections, to where you may not feel it the first time as much, but I think this is the kind of movie you can watch again and again and again without necessarily getting sick of it. There's no part of this movie where, except for maybe the Harley Quinn sequence, but that's really not as long as it seems like the first time you watch it. But for the most part, this is the kind of movie where I think you could throw it on and just kind of chill with it, and it's like easy, fun. I think it's going to be one that gets a lot of rewatches just because.
I agree 100%. I definitely enjoyed it quite a bit.
I'm not going to watch it again for quite some time. So I thought, you know, I guess I don't, like with Amanda Waller, I get where you're coming from. I guess my love of her as a character came from the Justice League Unlimited cartoon, where she was a strong black woman. She didn't have the superhero physique everyone had, but she was a power. I remember having a showdown with Batman, and she wasn't afraid of him a bit. And the first movie just turned her into like a psycho killer, and it was like, dude, this is not her. And then the second movie sure didn't help shit. I don't know if I see the racism there as much, but maybe I'm just not looking hard enough. But her as a character is such a cool character that they've just utterly destroyed. And I'll give you two, even though I like the animated movies, they did her no favors there either. Otherwise, this movie's easily forgettable.
Right. I think that's a great way to put it, Prihal, is it's just kind of, it's easily forgettable. And what would make it not forgettable is if there was something in this movie that I wanted to see continue into another movie or franchise of movies. And there just wasn't for me. Like I said earlier, there was just nothing that I was like, oh man, I can't, you know, there's just not. And maybe it's just me.
That's like what you were saying earlier, to what Frank was saying. If they would have made this movie about Waller and really done a deep dive on her, like what she has to go through, she's probably under a fucking shit ton of pressure to get shit done. And if they, I think if they would have focused more on her, throw out the garbage last movie, don't even pay attention to it, I would have liked to see another Suicide Squad movie if that was the whole, I guess, main part of it, was that she's trying to run these ops, dealing with a bunch of criminals, and she's the one who's behind the scenes saving the world. You know, that would have been something I would have been excited for if they would have dove deep in this movie with her for me to watch the next one. But, you know, obviously they didn't, so.
Yeah, and that was why I had really thought of it that way, but when Frank didn't mention that, I was like, you know what, that would have been the different take maybe I needed to get me interested in some sort of Suicide Squad franchise, right?
Yep.
Because she would then be the constant, and it's her, what fucking problem are they bringing to her now? And she's got to go select a bunch of assholes, you know what I mean? And she gets no credit for it, but she's got to keep these motherfuckers on a leash, and she's got to decide when to blow someone's head off and when not to blow someone's head off, and keep everybody chill in the room. But yeah, you're right. Like, that's why I said it just came down to some shitty action movie with a bunch of cursing, and like, I don't think I'm really into that anymore. That's why I just, But
what you just said is probably exactly dead on. I'm not into that anymore. I can see myself liking this movie a whole lot better in my early 20s, but I'm just beyond that in my and understandable. I've been on the show and said it before, I love crappy movies, but this was not one that I, you know,
it wasn't crappy enough. It wasn't crappy enough to not justify some fucking plot. I'm sorry, you had too big of a budget to mail in the rest of the shit. Okay, I want to see what was that Russian movie, Frank, that you and Fix It
Guardians?
I watched that was so awful, don't put me on that boat. Guardians.
Yeah. We need that level production to enjoy, to make it enjoyably shitty. Again, I'm not trying to shit on the movie that much. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I really think they thought they were springboarding sort of franchise here. And at least in my eyes, they didn't do it. And then to reference what Frihol said, when I looked at the reviews, that fact, I was, what did I watch? I did watch I think the critic score is at like 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, but here's what's interesting. The Rotten Tomatoes audience score is like 10 points under the review score.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I thought that was interesting.
That's weird, right? Like, that it's usually flip-flop. Like, I think it's exactly flip-flop for Black Widow, where the audience score is like 90-something and the critic score is like 80. It was really weird that it's opposite. Because I figured you'd have all the Marvel fanboys saying, told you, our guy does it better. And then you'd have all the Snyder folks that love it because they're just killing people. And, you know,
edgy and R-rated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's very R. You know, you got your Deadpool fans that would love that shit. Those demographics would all have loved it. And it was like, oh, shit, it's like low 80s on the audience score. Like, that was kind of weird. But honestly, that's kind of how I felt. Like, not that I felt it was 80% fresh or whatever.
I'm glad you mentioned Deadpool, because I need to, you know, I want to do the X-Men movie countdown before the end of the year. And so that means I need to go back and watch Deadpool again to see how that one holds up, because I've not watched that movie in the end since theatrical. And I'm really curious to see how the two of them compare, because they definitely have a lot in common. But whereas I came out of Deadpool, I think, too high on it. And with Reflection, I felt like I lost points with me, you know, thinking back on it after a really good theatrical viewing. I think the opposite is true with Suicide Squad, where I went in, like you said, I went in there kind of hyped for it, and I was really, really happy with the first third of the movie or so. And it wasn't, roughly around the time when they did the Harley Quinn flashback, that's when I realized that they just downshifted and that they were never going to get back the highs of the first 15 minutes. That first 15 minutes is such a perfect encapsulation of Suicide Squad, up to the brilliance of Amanda Waller having that whole distraction play, and here's the second team getting in without a problem and stuff, so even she looks good in that moment. That first 15 minutes is the Suicide Squad movie I hoped for and wanted and got and was super fucking thrilled for, and the problem is the rest of the movie cannot live up to that. There's a lot of callbacks in this movie to earlier Gunn movies and also earlier Zack Snyder movies. They both did the Dawn of the Dead remake together, and very much like Dawn of the Dead, the first 10 fucking minutes are so awesome that the rest of the movie can't even hope compare. And I think it's the same situation here. It's such a killer, literally killer 15 first minutes. It's basically the Saving Private Ryan of superhero movies. After the Jim Carroll song ends, it just never comes back from that heist. That was, I think, a problem. But I think having watched bits and pieces of it on HBO Max, I think I'll be watching it again for pleasure. I think that I have an affection for a number of those characters going into it. In particular, I would have to say that I liked Idris Elba playing Bloodsport, a character I couldn't give less of a shit about, but I just enjoyed the way he played the character. I'm going to watch the movie again for sure. Even though I'm very, very critical of it, I definitely enjoy it, and because I like this world more than I like the Marvel X characters, I probably in retrospect I'll end up liking it better than Deadpool. But I've also got my issues with it, and as somebody who knows these characters and knows the comic books, that I'm going to nitpick. But also I think it just has some failings as a movie in general, regardless of how the fidelity to the adaptation or anything like that.
The character growth moment where he's petting the rat, I thought the character moment was going to be from Polka Dot Man always seeing his mom, and then finally when you look through his eyes at some members of this team, he starts to see the team, right? I thought that's where we were going with this, where finally he's got no friends, he just wants to die, he hates his life, been tortured his whole life, and then he's finally getting closer to these people, and he's actually going crazy and partying in the cantina, you know what I mean? And yeah. then he gets to have some sort of noble sacrifice in the end, and no, it was just, you know what, that's what I was waiting for. I'm like, oh wait, no, he just saw his mom the whole time and that was it, and then he gets killed. I'm like, oh, that was weird. So then why did we have the whole sob story to begin with about, oh, she tortured me and my brother and sisters and some of them survived, and you know what I mean?
Problem with the rat moment too at the end is that they're trying to hint at character growth and such, and a lot of the reviews that I've read have talked about James Gunn's trauma roots and how it's getting back the gross, you know, we see titties in this movie, we see lots and gore and shit, we have that nihilistic vibe the whole movie has and such. And one thing that works well with the Guardians movies is that he takes the edgelord tendencies that he's always had, and then he also gives you these heartfelt moments, and so you kind of get a mix of two very distinct flavors that shouldn't go together but somehow work with the Guardians movie. Whereas with this movie, you don't need the heartfelt at all, you don't need the character growth. I want these guys to be a bunch of fucking scumbags, you know. I don't want them to, you know, like suddenly there's a heel turn with the Peacemaker, and then fucking Bloodsport's gotta save the rat catcher, which I don't even know why he's gotta save her, there aren't any rats in the fucking building. Oh, and then you know, he's getting over his phobias and learning to love again, all this kind of bullshit, and his daughter's watching him on the TV and she's like, that's my dad, I'm suddenly proud of him. All that shit doesn't work for this kind of movie, and it's out of place. And I think it's him trying to again recapture that Guardians vibe, his great commercial success, and I think it's ill-considered in this movie. And I think that's part of the resentment, is that it goes so far, it's so balls out, and then it takes that one nut and it kind of pushes it back in again. You know, it's like you think that the nuts are all the way out, but he's got one tucked up under his butthole.
Okay. I can agree with that.
The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card lost some delay. So this is all I have to say. We think you're special. The 108th Sage, Baby Skeletor, Canoes, Carlos Fopp, Chris Dunford, Chris Litton, Chris Thompson, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Del Dracula, Dr. Angie, Dirk Ashton, who added, thanks Ars, P. Ed Moore, El Romero Mero, Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jake IMM, Jeffrey Brown, John is Watching Cartoons, Kenny Crawley Jr., KSCGSF Podcast, Martin Gray, Mike at Send Aliens to Me, Mint Prairie Justice, A Greg Sanders Vigilante Podcast, Randy Caldwell, Ranger Gort, Resurrections, and Adam Warlick and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Sean Phillips, Sesquoid, Tim Price, The Pod Crasher, Tora, Trekker Talk, and Wonder Woman, Warrior for Peace Podcast. We got a Facebook like from Debosh on WordPress. Sebastian liked our post DC Special
podcast, the DK Encyclopedia Diaries, Volume 7. Canoes agreed. Excellent. Thanks, Ars. Seeing as my knowledge of Black Canary came from the Arrowverse, this should be great. Jeffrey Brown noted. So you were talking about Black Canary. Yeah, she's awesome in Birds of Prey. Dave agreed. Awesome.